This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
The Lord may have another purpose for me. And it set all the pundits of Twitter. Does that mean he's not committed or he's not focused or he's not energetic? Nobody has ever done more with less in the history of politics than what the staff has done. Like to think that they think that they've been part of something bigger than themselves.
And as I suspend my campaign today, I have renewed faith, deeper faith, that the Lord will show me the way forward and fulfill the purpose of my life.
And then there were two. Not one, two. Doubly.
Well, technically three, but you're right, two.
Yeah, look, I'd like to have Bernie Sanders hang around for a while because he's nothing but fun. But it'll come down to these two. These two being Trump and Hillary. I'll have a new blog up about that today. Welcome. Hi, how are you? And at 6:11 in the morning on show number 643, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. Katie Couric's in studio later, which would be great. And Geraldo Rivera isn't, but he'll be on the phone. And Geraldo Rivera is very close personal friends with Donald Trump. So I thought I'd open with this. You guys tell me what you think. What are you, out of your mind? That'd be my first question.
That's a good icebreaker.
Yeah, that's what I thought I'd open with. At 6:11, the Steve Cochran Show would like you to be involved in a little something Andre and I are doing later today. Andre got her haircut today. Mary, did you see Andre's haircut? She looks lovely. Looks delightful.
A little choppy.
I have not seen it yet.
Yeah. A little choppy.
Yeah, it looks good.
Excellent.
Later on today, you and I are going to be helping out something called the Sunshine Through Golf Foundation for the Chicago District Golf Association. And I know how some of you in the audience love when we talk about golf. It's charity, okay?
Yeah.
And it's a 100-hole par 3 golf marathon. Now, we're not going to play 100 holes. Kids, you know, we're tired. And if I turn down 100 holes, you know, I must be tired.
We want to give others a chance.
Yeah, so Dr. Kevin Most, you and I will be out there. And we are looking to, pardon me, raise as much money as possible, as fast as possible, so we can help the Sunshine Through Golf Foundation. Mm-hmm. Now, I have to say right now, I am disappointed in our fundraising total.
Uh-oh, I haven't looked. Did anybody donate?
Dr. Kevin Most has raised $500.
Okay.
I have raised $50.
Did you donate to yourself?
No, I have not.
Okay.
You're not on the board yet.
I'm not on the board. Well, yeah. Okay, in my defense, though, he just announced this, what, 2 days ago?
Yeah. Well, Monday.
Okay, yeah, Monday. I got to get on the board. I need to make a donation to myself.
Now, on the other hand, the leader is an individual named Kevin Gretkowski, who has raised $7,430.
Oh, I don't think we're going to catch him
from
by today.
19 donations. Well, there's a lot of listeners.
Well, that's true. Yeah. And this is a fantastic organization.
Sunshine Through Golf benefits not rich golfers in funny pants. It benefits the folks that don't get access to play. Yeah. It works with kids with special needs. Mm-hmm. It helps bring joy to people with special needs through the game of golf.
Yeah, and they're going to try and open 92 camps this summer for about 1,200 people with special needs who can play golf and learn the game.
Yeah, and it's a really nice story and a nice thing. So we'd like you to help us. If you go to sunshinethroughgolf.org, right there on the homepage is the event for today, and you can see right there how to donate. You can just, it says to donate to an event golfer listed above, click here. Click there and donate, and we appreciate it. And I don't care if Andrea beats me. I just don't want Dr. Most to beat me.
I know. You know, maybe, how about, what if we team up? Like, we could have the Cochran Darless team.
Okay.
And people can give to either of us, and then you and I will team up, and our collective winnings hopefully will beat him.
Instead of paying attention to the show, I'll kick a couple of $100 in now for you and I.
Okay. Oh, someone else just donated to
just
you.
Just to jumpstart it.
Okay, good.
All right.
I'll donate to us, too, to our team.
It's sunshinethroughgolf.org, and we'll do that later today at the Ziegfeld Troy Par 3 course.
The Ziggy Troy. And I know
Dave.
Was
that Woodfield?
Yeah, Woodridge, I think.
Or Woodridge?
Woodridge, yeah. I think Dave and Mary and Mike and Mary. Yeah, and
I already donated to Dr. Most.
Yeah, well, then that's great. I have an opportunity to donate to Andre and me, then. I don't want you to miss out. I mean, that'll be great for you.
You want the website?
Again, David, sunshinethroughgolf.org. Mm-hmm. You want me to log on for you?
No, I have my own password.
Okay. And Mary, I'm looking forward to your donation as well.
Okay. Can you guess my password?
I can now. I think you just changed it.
Captain, while a great many people see you as a hero, there are some who'd prefer the word vigilante. You've operated with unlimited power and no supervision. That's something the world can no longer tolerate.
Nick DiGilio standing by. He sees the movies that you don't see, so you don't have to. And if he's got one he loves, he always tells you about it. And yes, he's up till 5 a.m. He works in the middle of the night. He's not like you and I. He's Nick D at Nick D Show. Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
What was that clip I just heard?
That was Captain America Civil War, which opens Friday.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. It actually opens tonight. You know, I mean, they say, you know, they keep saying the movie's open on Friday, but it's gotten to the point now where, you know, it's 7 p.m. on Thursday.
Right,
and
right.
They always say that it opens on Friday because it looks better at the weekend box office because it's like, oh, we'll conveniently forget that there were, you know, four showings in 3,000 theaters on Thursday.
So they're it's typical Hollywood accounting. They're big cheaters.
Exactly.
So
I hear nothing but great things about this movie. You know, it's going to make like $250 million over the weekend. It's going to be a huge movie. And the fact that, you know, there's like no other movie opening against it says a lot. And I think a lot of people are going to be totally gratified that they saw this movie, considering how bad that stupid Batman Superman movie was.
Yeah. And if Robert Downey Jr. is in it, it's bank. It just makes nothing but money.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, he stars in those terrible Sherlock Holmes movies, and they make a lot of money. This is from what I understand, this is supposed to be really great. The effects are great. The story is really good. You know, the pace moves along. It runs at 2 hours and 20 minutes. A lot of these movies are long, but apparently it just goes by really quickly, and it's supposed to be great. And it will be, without question, the biggest movie of the weekend, without question.
I have declared that I will vote for president for any candidate that legally limits the length of movies to 2 hours.
Oh, okay.
I second that.
Yeah, if you mandate a movie can't be longer than 2 hours, I'll vote for you, unless your name's Donald Trump. Back to you, Nick.
I was just going to say that myself. But that's pretty much the only one. I did want to mention a movie that I watched on Netflix. And it's called Special Correspondence. And
Ricky Gervais thing?
Yeah, yeah. And I happen to be a massive Ricky Gervais fan. He's one of my favorite people on the planet. I think the guy's a genius. I think he's hilarious. I personally think he should host every award show ever, all the time. And I just love his work. You know, I love The Office. I love the movies he makes. He wrote and directed this movie. It stars him and Eric Bana. Eric Bana plays this hotshot, egotistical reporter and who works for a news radio station. He's also a host. And he and Ricky Gervais, who plays a sound engineer at the radio station, are supposed to go to Ecuador to cover a war and an uprising. And Ricky Gervais mistakenly throws out their passports and their airline tickets on the way to the airport. And they end up going to the Mexican restaurant across the street from the radio station and then faking that they're doing reports from Ecuador. And then faking that they got kidnapped, and it becomes an international thing. So Eric Bana is in it. Ricky Gervais is in it. Ricky Gervais wrote and directed it. Vera Farmiga is in it. Kevin Pollak is in it.
Oh, that's a great cast. And Eric Bana is actually very funny.
Yeah,
but I haven't heard good things about this.
Well, let me just say this: I was shocked at how bad it was. You know, Ricky Gervais, for me, like when I see his name on anything, I immediately know it's going to be good, especially if he's creatively involved. I mean, if he's in something as an actor, you know, it'll be fine. He'll be great in it. But if he writes, directs, and creates something, it's usually pretty great and pretty brilliant. I could not believe how bad this movie was.
Phoned it in?
Phoned it in big time. It's a great idea for a movie ripe with satire. You know, the kind of biting satire that Gervais is possible of doing. But this is just bad. The jokes are bad. The story makes little to no sense. The characters are one-dimensional. The female characters in this movie are just, you know, and this is not something that Ricky Gervais is known for, but it's a relatively misogynistic film. Vera Farmiga's character is just despicable in this movie, and the way she's portrayed is really bad. This is just a terrible movie that goes from unfunny cheap jokes to a crazy action climax that makes no sense whatsoever. If someone had told me that, you know, and I had not known that Ricky Gervais wrote and directed this, I would be like, wow, Ricky Gervais starred in this piece of crap movie to make some money. But he created it. And this has got to be, without question, one of the most disappointing things that somebody I admire has ever done. Now, my question to you guys is, have you ever admired an artist in any capacity that you really, really love, and then there's one thing that they did that really disappointed you?
I'm sure. Really, yeah, I mean, really I'm sure, but nothing jumps to mind. But yeah, there's got to be, right? There's got to be somebody you go, what the hell were they thinking there?
Yeah. I mean, when you know, someone that was like maybe consistently really, really good, and then suddenly, boom, this thing comes out. And I just thought about this earlier this morning, so I didn't like compile a list or anything, but it's something to think about. You know what I mean? Like, think about going back and thinking about these people that you really love and admire, and then, boom, what is this? I can give you one. I just thought of one.
Okay.
The Paul McCartney Christmas song.
Simply Having.
One of the greatest songwriters of all time, and it's one of the worst Christmas songs ever recorded.
Yeah. No, it's not great. Yeah, it's not great at all. No. Not great. Anything else opening this weekend?
No, not really. I mean, there's a couple of little films, but it really doesn't matter because every single person on the planet is going to go see Civil War. And, you know, like I said, it's supposed to be really good. And from what I understand, this is from the people who have seen it. If you're going to wait a few days to see it, there are a lot of really big surprises in the movie and some really wonderful moments. And I've been encouraged by everybody who I know who's seen the film to stay away from the internet because there's going to be stuff given away. So if you're going to wait for a few days or a week to see the movie, don't read any articles or don't read any posts that involve Captain America Civil War if you want to be surprised. Because evidently there's some surprise cameos in it, some really great moments, and it's rife with the possibility of being spoiled on the internet. So make sure you stay away from the internet, you know, before you see the movie.
All right, buddy. You got a question?
By the way, I want to thank you for letting me talk about Risky Business on the air, because we had a massive turnout. We had huge turnout.
Hey, Nick, I know they released that Mila Kunis trailer yesterday, Bad Moms. That looks hilarious. Yeah. When's that coming out?
It comes out, I believe, in the middle of the summer.
Oh, okay, so we got a couple months.
I think it comes out in late June or July.
Did you see this?
But yeah, it looks hilarious. Very funny.
It does look funny. Yeah, it does look funny. Absolutely.
It does.
You're on the radio tonight. We'll talk to you.
I am.
We'll talk to you Monday. Or Tuesday.
You got it, buddy.
See you, bye.
Yeah, Tuesday. Whatever. See
okay. Goodbye. 6:27. Here's what's coming up in about 20 minutes. Pat Brady will be in studio. For those of you who look forward to the Thursday connections with Chuck Todd from Meet the Press, Chuck's got into a crazy schedule over the past month of running to do taped interviews for the show and various things and being on planes at this hour that conflict with that particular segment. We're not fighting.
So this has nothing to do with your fake fight?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he'll be back on the show. He's going to be on Tuesday. We'll just jump around to a few days while the election rolls out. At 6:28, back after this on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
So a year ago, when this race started in earnest, did you ever think this is where you would be this morning?
You know, I didn't, but I don't think that's necessarily bad. You know what? I think something different and something new is probably good for our party. And look, I don't think anyone predicted what happened. So look, we're here. We're going to get behind the presumptive nominee.
Are you pouring Baileys on your breakfast cereal yet?
No, I didn't have to. I had plenty of coffee already this morning. No need. No Baileys yet.
Pretty tasty.
That's Reince Priebus, director of the RNC, an alcoholic correspondent for CNN, Allison Camerota. What was that move? Got any Baileys? Pretty tasty. Pat Brady's here. You know Reince Priebus very well.
I do.
And this ride that he's been on since Trump came up in June, I think he has handled himself exceptionally well.
He has, and he's been a great RNC chairman. He's raised record amounts of money and handled himself well during this. And I know, Reince, he might have some Baileys on that cereal.
Well, but he has never taken the bait.
He has not.
Opportunity. Every time he's gone on to rip Trump, he's had an opportunity. And when Trump was being an absolute jerk to the RNC, basically accusing Priebus of being a criminal, And he never sunk to that level.
You know, he's a young guy, too. He's in his early 40s. He's a lawyer, very accomplished and very calm and very mature. And I agree with you completely in this, that he has the hardest job in the country right now.
So not that it matters at this point, but Cruz and Kasich got out really quickly. Money and fatigue?
Reality.
Cruz was, it was reality.
Both reality,
not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But it had to be money, too, with Cruz, right? Or did he have money left?
Cruz has money. With Kasich, it might have been money, but I think it's a reality. After the New York or the I-95 wins, when Trump had such huge wins out there, I think the reality started to set in, and then Tuesday night just finished it.
All right, so we're already talking about running mates and various other things with Trump. Before we get to Hillary and Bernie, and we'll do that a little bit later in the 7 o'clock hour, the name that popped up this morning is Rudy Giuliani, not as a running mate, but director of Homeland Security. Are we going to see a bunch of Republican suck-ups now who would have crossed the street to avoid Donald Trump who are now going to want to be in the circle of power?
Yeah, and Trump even mentioned it in his victory speech, which wasn't much of a victory speech, but he said that people are trying to get on the quote-unquote Trump train. And Rudy Giuliani, it really shocks me. To me, and I love America's mayor, it's more about business than it is about actually public service, because I don't see those two agreeing on too much.
Yeah, because Giuliani, though I know he has been cordial to Trump through the years, they've clashed on many things. And Giuliani, in the days after 9/11, if there was ever a reason to change a state constitution or a city laws and keep him around as mayor, it would have been then. Though Bloomberg turned out to be fine. But Giuliani was exceptional around 9/11. You may remember that he ran for president in 08, and by then his ego had already blown up to massive proportions, and he decided he could start in Florida, and he was out before he started. So he's been on the periphery of the Republican side of things for a long time, and it just seems now maybe a little desperate to get back in.
And these are not young men.
No.
Trump's 70, but Rudy's in his mid-70s now, isn't he?
I think early 70s.
Early 70s?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do. The same would be interesting to see what Governor Christie does. I'm a big fan, but he did the same thing. And
well, don't you think Mary Pat, the wife, is looking at him like, I survived 9/11 and I'm in the middle of this?
You know, it's funny. You know,
yeah. I'm calling a divorce attorney as soon as this campaign's over.
You know, I've got some male buddies that have said, you know, I'm thinking about Trump, and the women are stepping in and saying no.
Right.
It's
how about
amazing.
That? Falling into the Republican suck-up category, though, like the Christies, the Palins, maybe even the Fiorinas, that can't help him, though, can it? Or can it?
Well, no, not if he's Mr. Anti-Establishment, if all the establishment people are behind him. He's no longer Mr. Anti-Establishment. But that's typical what happens. I remember when McCain won in 08, I used to joke we had to get shock absorbers for the bandwagon because everybody jumps on. And,
right.
And they were with you all the way.
Right. Giuliani, as recently as 17 days ago, was asked about a specific endorsement of Donald Trump. Listen.
Doesn't make sense to me that you are going to vote for Trump, but you won't endorse him.
Okay, so I'll endorse him. I mean, you know, but I'm not part of the campaign.
But what's the difference?
There
That's what
no
I don't
difference.
Understand. Why don't you say, I'm Rudy Giuliani. I mean a lot in New York politics.
Okay, I'm Rudy
I endorse Donald Trump.
Okay, I'm Rudy Giuliani. I mean a lot in New York politics. I endorse Donald Trump, but I'm not part of the campaign.
Well, I don't understand. What does that last part mean?
What does that mean is I'm not a surrogate. They haven't asked me to do anything. I'm not involved in the campaign. I'm not called upon to give advice except a few times when I've volunteered it. I'm not part of the campaign apparatus. I don't want people to think I am.
So how's
but you have my number. If you want to call me, you have my number.
And I have given you advice.
It's really ridiculous. The age thing is a big deal. So I want to talk about the running mate piece of this in a second because, you know, I don't mean to keep stating the obvious here, but they are old. And Hillary's old. And you need to have somebody that could outlive the president if the president dies in office.
Well, look at the aging pictures. Even a guy like Obama is a good shape, young guy.
Yeah.
Or George Bush, the presidency ages you.
Oh, yeah. In a big, big, big way. Look what it did to me.
Okay, but for the...
Oh, that was a class presidency. That was different.
But for the... So the Bushes are saying, we will absolutely not endorse Trump. Does that mean that when they're not going to vote for him, or they're not going to vote at all, or they're going to vote for Hillary?
I think it probably means, if it were me looking at that, is we're not going to raise any money for you.
Yeah, as far as who they actually vote for when the curtain closes, that's a different story. But that does raise the specter of who do you vote for? If you don't want Hillary and you don't want Trump, who do you vote for? And that has raised a big conversation overnight of a third-party candidacy that means nothing other than somebody else can go, a conservative candidate.
I got a candidate.
Yeah, so Pat will name that candidate in just a second for you, at if you're so inclined. It's 6:47. Let's do this first. It's Traffic with Mary on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Ohio, you know, is an important state. No Republican has ever been elected president of the United States without winning Ohio.
Well, I think John will be very... I've had a good relationship with John.
He's got a lot of government experience in the Congress as a governor.
I think John will be very helpful with Ohio, even as governor.
But he says he doesn't want to be a vice president.
Well, that could be. I mean, he said that. I've heard.
Would
him
he be
say
someone
it
you'd be interested in vetting?
I would be interested in vetting John. I like John.
And John is. You saw that Wolf Blitzer interview last night. It should scare the hell out of you. Holy mackerel, is he clueless.
Have you ever seen Pat Brady shake his head so much?
No. Well, it's frightening. Really is frightening. Pat Brady's here. All right, who's the VP?
Well, you need somebody that understands free trade, understands agriculture, understands the economy, understands the world, a national security hawk, and a guy with a booming voice that could do the fireside chats like Roosevelt, and I think that's Orion.
Hey!
You know what? This is a true story.
Orion Darlis, get some diversity, wouldn't that be great? That's a good slogan.
I don't want to get hardcore Republicans upset with Orion, but for those of you hardcore Republicans who can't find anything decent to think or say about President Obama, if not for Orion Samuelson, you never would have heard of Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to 2004, when Obama made his big speech, there was a guy running for Senate here in Illinois, handsome young dude, who is married to a famous Hollywood actress. And why am I forgetting his name?
Paul Ryan?
Jack Ryan.
Jack Ryan. Yep, sir.
So Jack Ryan, it comes out that Jack Ryan used to take his wife. Do you remember the hot
she
boy?
She was in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a...
Mike, look that name up.
Frequented clubs.
Jack Ryan's wife went to a couple of sex clubs.
Well, it was...
Now, back then, going to sex clubs was a bad thing. Now, apparently, you could use it to campaign on. So he drops out of the race. This goofball named Alan Keyes, who carpetbaggers would deny, comes in, and the whole thing blows up. Jerry Ryan's the actress we're trying to think of. So Washington, Republican Washington, comes to Orion Samuelson and says, "We want you to run for Senate. We want you to step in. We want you to run for Senate."
No kidding.
There were high-level meetings about it. There was a rather large amount of money they expected him to kick in as well. Not that he didn't have it, but, you know, the idea is, do you want to spend it?
Yeah.
And Orion, at that point, you go back, it's over 10 years ago. He's, what, about 70, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
And he's healthy. He and Gloria talked about it, and they decided not to do it. I maintain, and this is not a knock on Obama, I'm just talking about reality here. I maintain that if Orion Samuelson runs for the Senate in Illinois, he wins.
I agree.
And he wins, and it sets back Obama's career, and it changes the course of history.
I think of a world under Orion. What would it be?
It'd be pleasant, and there'd be food-filled.
Yeah, we'd have tons of bacon, tons of meat.
A lot of pork.
We'd all look good.
So who does he pick other than Orion?
I really don't know, and I've been asked this question about 10 times in the last day. Who really wants it? Because it could potentially be a huge train wreck. It's got to be somebody at the end of their career or somebody.
Christie.
Yeah. That some of the hangers-on are. I really don't know. But he said he's got to get someone with political experience. But I guess the equivalency would be, or the equivalent would be, when Obama picked Joe Biden.
Right.
What, you got a guy, steady hand,
right,
respected in the Congress. It's got to be somebody like that. But for the life of me, I can't think of who that might be, who would do it.
And who's going to say yes?
I think you need somebody younger.
Would Kasich say yes?
No.
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 I'd be shocked.
John,
excuse me. It's not governor. It's John.
Yeah, because he couldn't think of his last name.
Of course.
Yeah. Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, we need another old white
hair
guy.
No, I'm telling you, he wants it.
Oh, I know, but he's polarizing.
He's older than Trump, I think.
I wish he'd just get off the stage because early on, his commentary, and I know people from that generation revere him, but I just think it's time for him to step aside.
Ben Carson.
I mean,
no political experience.
No political experience, and had a great couple weeks.
He's the guy that is actually supposed
vetting
the candidates.
Well, you can pull a Cheney and vet it and pick yourself.
Right. That's what I'm saying, right? Of course, if you sit down with Ben Carson for the interview.
Wasn't that in House of Cards?
Kind of.
That's right.
You sit down with Ben Carson for the interview, you doze off halfway through. Tell me where you'd like to be in 5 years.
How about if Trump picks a moderate female?
He's not going to pick a woman.
I don't know, Steve.
No, he's not going to pick a woman. Unless a woman agrees to sleep with him and becomes his
friend. What woman that has a career or a brain would take it, given what he said? He's got an 80% disapproval rating among women.
Well, like you said, rest my case.
I know. Yeah.
Somebody
yeah.
with a brain.
Tongue-in-cheek.
You know,
Katie Couric stumped her. And the question was, what newspaper do you read? That's a toughie.
Right. It is difficult. Actually, you know who's tanned, rested, and ready? Carly Fiorina. Carly Fiorina, the campaign killer.
Yeah, that didn't go so well.
So we don't know. And the point of this, too, this goes to the extension, and this is in the blog that'll go up later today, too. The point of this is, when you think about Trump filling out the very important cabinet positions and these people that affect your life every single day and all of the tentacles of people he would appoint around the world as president, who are his friends? You know, I mentioned this yesterday. You and I are the same age. You go back to 1980, 81, 82, 83, when Trump started to become a name, and certainly in the late 80s and beyond. Can you tell me anybody he hangs out with
who's
like
Miss
Donald
Worlds.
Trump's best buddy?
Those Miss Worlds, right? I mean, they're probably his buddies.
Yeah.
His
family seems to really like him. Well, they're on the payroll, but they seem to really like him.
That's a really good point. Who are his friends?
Because everybody else who's come along, everybody else in politics has come along and go, well, these are the people he's associated with through the years. These are the people he's worked with. This is his group. This is his posse. Mm-hmm. What's Trump's posse?
You know, too, interestingly, a year ago, I had played some golf with some rich people and was sitting around very successful business people and to a man and a woman. There's not one that had anything good to say about him.
No.
So, you know, and that to me, another issue is going to be storm clouds on the horizon here is, can he raise money? And at this convention that Reince is running here in 7 or 8 weeks, I've talked to donors that aren't going now. So let's see what happens. Listen, I'm not voting for him, but I'm not pulling for him to fail either as a Republican. But I'm interested to see if he can raise any money and actually pull this off. And here's something to watch, too, which is boring, but this platform committee is going to meet in a couple of weeks, the platform of the party, and that usually reflects the platform of the candidate. And he's way off the reservation on most Republican issues, so that's going to be his first test of legislative ability.
How much input does he have in that? Full?
Well, somebody from his team will be there, but the people that are writing this are the establishment Republicans, so that could be a big, big fight. It's always a fight at the convention, but it might be even bigger this year considering how far off he is.
Third-party conservative write-in possible?
I don't think it's possible.
I mean, not a write-in, but a third-party conservative.
I don't even think you could do it logistically. I think you've missed all the filing dates, or you're getting close to it.
But if you get somebody that is very well-known and a conservative who's willing to take a bullet for the poor analogy, but bullet for the team just to be the wedge.
Yeah, but even if...
But then you get Hillary elected, right?
But even if somebody... Yeah, exactly. And then Trump blames that person. They'll blame it on the establishment. But even if you get somebody to do it, I think that the timelines have run to get on the ballots.
We'll come back with Rick Pearson talking about other political things. Also, are we going to have... is Adelstein in today, or is he... Adelstein's not available today. All right, we'll talk about the Democrats behind his back. Coming up on... Well, that was the tone. 7 o'clock. We'll get to the news next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We understand, and I do not deny it for one second, that we have an uphill battle in front of us. But I think we have a path toward victory, although it is a narrow path. Our goal is twofold. Number one, to win a majority of pledged delegates. Number two, it is to make sure that in those states where we have won landslide victories, you know, 65-70% of the votes, that the superdelegates in those states listen to their constituents and vote the way their constituents voted in their state's primaries or caucuses.
Makes sense. Probably not going to happen. Remember what Pat Brady and others have taught us. The Democrat and Republican parties are, well, they're clubs. They can make up the rules. They're not governed by federal law in most cases. So Bernie's up the creek without a paddle. Hey, that'd be a good name for the third party. The up the creek without a paddle party. Right?
What's a creek?
It's a creek. Sounds better.
It's a New York thing.
Sounds better if you say crick. It's 7:14, just ahead of traffic. Let's start here with Rick Pearson from your Chicago Tribune and ChicagoTribune.com. Nobody's a better political writer in America. The host of the Sunday Spin. Who's your guest?
I've got Riverside Police Chief Tom Weitzel. I've got Chris Mooney from the University of Illinois. And I have Democratic consultant Tom Bowen.
Okay. Busy show as always at Sunday morning at 7 a.m. Is there going to be a teacher strike?
Apparently not, at least not for this school year. That was the vote by the House of Delegates, and I'm sure that's a great deal of relief to a lot of parents. They say the teachers and the CTU say that they're going to focus their attention on Springfield and try to help fill this over $1 billion budget deficit. But here again, as I've said all along, counting on help from Springfield is, I don't think, a good idea these days.
Why the level heads?
You know, I have to wonder if there wasn't a bit of understanding that they, even though the teachers do retain great popularity in the city of Chicago, that a strike coming at the end of the year would not do anything as far as their PR purposes, as they still attempt to try to negotiate a contract with the Chicago Public Schools.
Yeah, I mean, at the bare minimum, you had to consider the fact that graduating from high school is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Graduating from even middle school. But to screw up that moment for kids and parents and reschedule it and all those things that would make it less than maybe it could be, that's just not fair.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've talked in the past about how there was the issue of whether Karen Lewis would stay on as head of the teachers union. And, of course, we know about much of her inflammatory remarks. But it does seem like maybe after, you know, she's assured that her leadership team will continue, that maybe some cooler heads have prevailed. Now, the next step to see is, you know, what Karen Lewis and Mayor Emanuel do about whether there's any accommodations that can be made between the teachers and CPS about what the teachers' part of helping close that budget deficit may be.
How's her health, Karen Lewis? What do we know about her health? How's her health?
Her health seems to be fine. She's very active, back active with union activities.
Yeah, I mean, I got to give her credit for, even though I disagree with her methods, she has a tremendous amount of energy for somebody that's gone through what she's gone through health-wise.
Yeah.
Andrea?
Rick, don't you think, I mean, at least from my perspective, and you having covered this as well, this strange partnership, and I even go out on a limb saying partnership, between Karen Lewis and Mayor Emanuel now turning their sights on Rauner and Springfield saying, well, hey, you know what? We should really kind of join alliances here. I'm not saying it outright, but I think that's kind of the underlying premise now. Let's join forces now and blame all this on Rauner and Springfield.
Right. And, you know, you can't necessarily blame all this on Rauner, and the problems of CPS are longstanding, the financial issues. And given the hole that they're in, it's hard to expect that there can be an immediate turnaround. I mean, we saw yesterday in Springfield a bill to change the state school aid formula. State Senator Andy Menara downstater, and in one of the early versions of the bill, you know, it gave about $500 million of cash assistance and credit to the Chicago Public Schools. And Republicans, under Rauner's orders, immediately started the chant that this is a bailout for the city of Chicago at the expense of your schools. And, of course, that bill's going nowhere.
Pat Brady's here as well. Pat, you have a question for Rick?
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Pretty good, Pat.
Hey, you know, I was down in Springfield yesterday roaming around pretty much the whole day, and I got the sense that these working groups and maybe some of the folks, they might be close to getting a budget deal. What are you hearing?
I'm hearing that, but at the same time, you know, what deal that they may cut, I still think in the long run it's going to be a long road here because it's going to be cuts, but it's also going to be more revenue. And the prospects of doing anything that involves any kind of a tax increase prior to the November election, I think is a very, very difficult road to go.
So you think it's more talk than action?
Well, I do think it's a good sign that you have both sides working and that it kind of is bubbling up from the grassroots level rather than being leader-driven. But that having been said, these groups can only go so far without the acquiescence and backing of their leadership. And until there's a deal struck, we won't know if that actually exists.
Last question before you go. And don't forget Sunday Spin. And, of course, Rick Pearson on CLTV, Channel 9, and in your Chicago Tribune and online at chicagotribune.com. Rick, I know you wouldn't say this, but let me just say it. Get the paper. Would it kill you to get the paper? Get the paper.
Please. A couple of them.
Come on. What are you chasing over the next couple of days? Because as we get all wrapped up in, you know, the wild, wild, wide world of President Trump, what's on your agenda?
Well, that's exactly what's on my agenda. I mean, what are the dynamics as far as a Trump at the top of the ticket? And what does that mean in Illinois? That's one of the things we'll be discussing on the radio show. But you already have Charlie Cook, a national researcher, has moved 12 states into the Democratic column in the Electoral College based on Trump now being the presumptive nominee. Illinois, of course, was always in a presumptive Democratic state. But
is that bad, you know, Rick?
It's a bad. That's not great news.
That's not great news. Oh, God.
It's insane. You got Republicans. You got Republicans lining up to either say, "No, I was with Trump the whole time," or, "Of course, I'm against him, and I'll do everything I can to burn the house down."
Yeah, I mean, it's just the fluctuations and divisions within the Republican Party are just enormous at this time, and they do have very serious consequences down ballot in the fall.
Andrea mentioned the possibility of a female running mate. What if he chose the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, all of them, and he just rotated them through?
I mean, why not have a reality show star vice president, since Republicans are going to have one as a nominee?
How about it? Yes.
Omarosa.
Have a reality show to pick the vice presidential mm-hmm. running mate.
Yeah, it's been nutty.
Running mate would be, I guess, the ultimate apprentice, wouldn't it?
There you go.
There you go. And Omarosa will say anything to get on TV, so why not? all right, buddy, thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Rick Pearson, at RAP, is it at Rep 30? I believe so.
At Rep 30. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Let's talk about U.S.-Russian relations for a moment. In the past few weeks, on two occasions, Russian fighter jets barrel-rolled U.S. Military facilities.
Lack of respect.
Lack of respect.
For the United States.
If you were president, what would you tell Putin?
I would call him and I'd say, don't do it again. I would say, don't do it again. And I think I'll have a good relationship with him. So far, we're off to a good start. He said Trump is a genius, okay? I would have a good, I think I'll have a good
have
relationship.
Have you ever met with him? Have you ever spoken with him?
I don't want to say.
He's a child, man. I swear to you. You're driving to work this morning, even if you absolutely believe Trump's the answer, listen to what he just said and tell me how that's going to work. You think Vladimir Putin goes, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Trump. Don't do it again? Oh, yeah, well, we're fine then.
McCain had the best about Putin when he first came in. He goes, when President Bush said, I look into his eyes and see his soul, McCain goes, I look into his eyes and I see KGB.
Right. He's a bad guy.
He's a bad guy, yeah.
He's a bad guy. And I don't think picking up the phone and calling him and going, don't do it again, will get anything other than giggles out of the Kremlin. And by the way, Giggles Out of the Kremlin was my last album.
Well, I mean, our memory can't be that short. Didn't he say about McCain, I don't like POWs or, you
know. As they get caught.
When they get caught?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Trump's a beauty. He's just a beauty. All right, Pat Brady's here. So let's talk about the Democrats for a second. The system is rigged, in quotes, because the superdelegates who, and Bernie Sanders isn't wrong about this, the superdelegates in the states where he won in a landslide, they absolutely should be swayed to support the people, the public vote. But the public vote becomes nothing more than a beauty contest.
Yeah, and I think all of this on both sides has been exposed in this campaign cycle. And I imagine there's going to be some rule changes. But the same thing happened the other way in 2008 for President Obama, and Hillary Clinton stayed in the race just like Bernie's doing it. But New Hampshire's the greatest example where he had a huge win.
Yeah.
And he walked out with fewer delegates
right.
than Hillary. But it's just, like you said, that's the party. If you don't like the rules, get involved and change them. But those are the rules right now.
Do you think the Republicans will go to some sort of similar system of protection going forward after what happened this time with Trump?
I doubt it, because the people, the rank and file grassroots of the party would revolt, because now it's been exposed. So it's probably going to go to something more truly Democratic than it is right now.
You got to remember, we're not in a representative democracy. We're not in a democracy, a pure democracy. We're in a representative democracy.
A republic,
we elect
yeah.
people to represent us. If we elect idiots, it's your job to get rid of the idiots.
Yes, very well said.
All right, so Hillary's in.
Yes.
It's just a matter of formality. So explain to people right now, and by people I mean me, why should I go to Cleveland after all of this?
Well, the same reason you went to Florida in 12 or Minnesota in 08, it's the nominating convention for the Republicans, or you go to the Democrats, same thing. And it really turns into an infomercial. It's not like the old days, but that's why you should go. It'll be interesting to see, to me, from just watching politics, how Trump and his people react and how this convention comes off, because it's his convention. He runs this thing now. He's the run on the RNC.
I know. And when he runs the RNC and he runs the convention, he's going to have meetings. I'm not exaggerating. He's going to have meetings where he sits down and he goes, we need a little pizzazz. We need a little pop. We need a little something. There's going to be hot girls running around on stage.
He's already said that there, these conventions have been boring.
Cirque du Soleil would probably be there.
Whatever Ring he can master. Come up with. Yep. The circus set up, literally.
Yeah, it will be.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing. When Cleveland comes around, it may be the most entertaining Republican convention ever.
I think it's going to be fascinating. We're going to be there, right?
Yeah, well, that's the
plan. I'm going to be on the floor. I still have a seat on the floor.
You still have to be a Kasich delegate.
Yeah.
Is it like Blue Man Group, though, this time, where you're going to have to wear the rain ponchos?
No, but it will be like Blue Man Group when everybody leaves and they go, what happened? I don't know. How do you explain that?
I'm going to rip my shirt off like an AC/DC concert. It's going to be...
I want a front row seat next to both of you.
Pat Brady on my shoulders, pumping his fists, asking for an encore.
Face painting.
No, I think it will be. I encourage everybody to watch. It's Trump will, it'll be entertaining, but you got to remember, we're trying to elect a commander-in-chief here, so I'm not sure if entertainment equates to getting somebody that will actually make the country do better.
Frightening. Thanks, as always. And it's Pat_Brady, Next Generation Public Affairs. Next Generation Strategies, I should say. Next Generation Strategies is the name of the company. You know, keep your phone on.
I got it. Thanks.
At 7:30, we're back after this on 720 WGN with a big story.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Come back with another karaoke contestant. All right, Joe, what are you going to sing for us?
Slow Dancing by Johnny Rivers.
Go.
Just me and you and the lights down low. And we're slow dancing, swaying to the music.
Slow dancing. Just me and my girl.
Pretty good, Joe.
Slow dancing, swaying to the music. No one else in the whole wide world.
7:41 now, and karaoke is on. John DeCoste, the musical director for the show, is joining us from the studio. This is a home studio where he hangs out with Paul Schaefer, and they just jam. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning, everybody. Paul, put that's orange juice. You're going to spill it on the keyboard. Hello.
Yeah, nice to talk to you. So we got a good start. We got some really strong contestants when we rolled out karaoke. I mentioned the prizes are terrific. And in addition to the prizes, you'll have an opportunity to perform live with you at our Zany's Rosemont show 1 week from Sunday night. What are the details there?
Yeah, the details on that one are you can go to, it's actually Sunday night, May 15th. 7 o'clock at Zany's in Rosemont, and you can go to zanysrosemont.com, and we'll give you the number a little later after we do some songs.
Yeah, we're looking the number up right now at Zany's Rosemont to give you the phone number.
And I had it, and son of a gun, my home office is a mess.
Yeah, well, you're in the studio with Paul. So here's the deal. The talk show that we're doing on stage that night, it's like a late night talk show, but it's early because I can't stay up that late. So it's at 7 o'clock at night. It's the early late night talk show.
You got it right.
So,
early late night talk show with Steve Cochran. Yes.
So John will be there, and Tim Benker's our announcer.
Correct.
And Christopher DeCoste is our band leader.
Correct.
And fresh from their crime spree.
Amongst our guests, Ro and Anna, live on stage. And we're going to ask them deeply personal questions that are none of our business that they'd never talk about on the air.
I have a list, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So get your tickets, Zany's Rosemont, and we look forward to seeing you there because John will do a duet with the winner. You want to hear another contestant?
Oh, I would love to hear another contestant.
Let's go to Bill on line two. Good morning, Bill.
Morning.
Where are you headed today?
I'm heading up to Joliet.
What are you doing there?
Just going to work for a meeting.
And what's the job?
Probably shouldn't say that over the air.
It always amazes me when people refuse to say what they do. All right, I don't know what criminal element you're involved with, Bill, but I'm looking forward to hearing you sing. You going to do a little Prince for us?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a shot. I don't know all the lyrics, but I'm going to kind of wing it, I guess.
If you get to the part where you don't know the lyrics, just hum. Here's Bill doing Purple Rain.
All right, here we go. Never meant to cause you any sorrow. Never meant to cause you any pain. Only want to see you laughing in the purple rain. Purple rain, purple rain.
Keep going, man. We're swaying back and forth now.
Purple rain, purple rain. That's about all I know.
It's very impressive. And I think you did nail the lyrics.
Nice.
Musical director DeCoste, let's go back to you now. What were your thoughts on Bill?
Okay, Bill, that was phenomenal. And what an apropos choice. What a perfect timing choice of a song. It looks really good. I swayed too. Paul and I here at the home studio were swaying. It was wonderful.
All right, Bill, we need personal information from you. Don't go away. So Bill is one of our contestants that could possibly make it to the finals, which will be next Friday morning. Not tomorrow. Next Friday morning, where our three finalists will bring their cars to the WGN parking lot downstairs. They'll be forced to stay in the cars. John will be here. He'll go downstairs. He'll go car to car and have them sing live to him. And when they do, he will judge who is the best car singer in the second annual karaoke contest.
I'm checking the forecast for next Friday, too. Hopefully it'll be a nice sunny day. Yeah.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking for John.
And by the way, John, people can enter on video as well. Nope, he's on hold, so how could he talk to me? All right, let me do that. John, people could enter on video as well.
This is tough competition.
Mm-hmm.
Tough this year.
John's now back.
Yes, we will.
I was trying to help you out.
Am I here?
I somehow turned off everything in like 10 seconds. I don't know what I did. Listen, there's two ways to send in your submissions. You can either tweet us 15 seconds or less of you singing at Cochran Show on Twitter. And the hashtag singing in the car, or you can send an email to stevecochranshow@wjnradio.com and just attach your audio or video clip. And again, the three finals will be announced next Wednesday. They join us on Friday, and the grand prize winner gets a two-night stay at the Palmer House, a Hilton Hotel, and their choice of a GoPro or an Apple Watch from Apt Electronics.
These are awesome prizes.
Yeah, and they're second and third place folks with good prizes, too. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, John, thanks for that. Did you ever figure out the Zanies number? Because I don't think anybody looked it up here. Excellent.
Boy, the competition's going to be really fierce this year.
It's just
got a lot of people competing.
Getting deja vu.
Did John suddenly develop narcolepsy? It seems like he's dozing off during
the
show.
In the home office. Or the
a
home
delay
studio.
On the line.
I have that number for you, Steve.
Oh, go ahead, Jake.
It's 847-813-0484, and that's Bennett Wake Knight talking very loudly in the background.
Oh, 847- he's trying to get attention on him.
813-0484. Eddie Olchek coming up.
Yes, he is.
Olchek got to it. Olchek busting at center ice, comes over the line, shooting. He scores! Olchek! A shorthanded goal! He just blew right through the defense at center. Coffey couldn't even catch him. Fired it by Fuhr on the sixth side.
The great Eddie Olchek takes a break from hockey to chase his second love, and that's the Ponies in a full field at the Kentucky Derby. Enzo!
Well, a couple of things. First off, good morning, everybody.
Hi.
Everybody's
good morning.
Well.
Morning,
hi,
Enzo.
Second love? Well, all of a sudden, you're judge, jury, and executioner there?
I don't think executioner. I just always thought hockey was your first love.
Oh, okay.
Right. I mean, is it? You tell me. Is it?
Yeah. Right now?
Yeah. Well, no, right now. Right now, I know the answer.
Yeah, and also, too, just for the record, even though I played on the famous Clydesdales line back in the day, coined by my great Hall of Fame partner, and we were the fastest Clydesdales in history,
yes.
Not that that's saying anything, but the exact verbiage that my great partner now was calling back in the day was even Paul Coffey couldn't stay with him. And you know Paul Coffey was one of the fastest players ever to play in the NHL. You know that, Steve, right?
Do you remember that goal specifically?
Oh, I do. Oh, you kidding me? I was skating through the middle of the ice, split the defense, blew right by Coffey, skated left, shot right, we scored. That was it.
Is that one of your all-time favorites?
Pretty darn close. It was a playoff game, which made it even greater, and it was against Grant Fuhr. So I went by a Hall of Famer, and I blew it by a Hall of Famer. So,
man, do you remember?
And I'm in the American Polish Hall of Fame, so there you go.
Yeah, really? You got to cover both ways. Do you remember how the old building used to rock when it got that loud?
It was the greatest. If anybody, I feel... Look, the United Center obviously has its own, you know, special feeling and decor and everything else, but I just wish that Blackhawks fans now could have had a taste, a feel, and a smell of the old Chicago Stadium. It was classic. I mean, you know, look, I grew up going to games. I was lucky enough to be a fan and cheer through the glass onto the ice, and then I was lucky enough and privileged enough to be able to play for the Blackhawks and have that ability to look from the ice out into the crowd. But the noise in that building was it was electric. It was something that I've really never been a part of inside of a hockey building before. And obviously I'm a lot biased, but it was just a it was breathtaking when the fans were going, and it was a great building for sure.
Now, we have a hockey tie to the Derby.
Yes, we do.
The
yes,
favorite the favorite is Nyquist. Who is Nyquist?
Yeah. Well, Nyquist is a horse that is owned by Paul Redham, who is a Windsor native, Windsor, Ontario, right across the border from Detroit, hockey town, and he is a big Red Wings fan, and he's had many a horses, and he's named a lot of them after Detroit Red Wing players. So he's had horses like Zetterberg and Batsuk Mrazek, and he happened to name this one after Gustav Nyquist, the Swedish forward who plays for the Red Wings, and this horse is a perfect 7-for-7 in his career, and he is the favorite going into Saturday's race. So the hockey tie is there, and we'll see if Hockey Town becomes horse racing town for 2 minutes on Saturday evening.
So if I go to the Derby, can I yell Detroit sucks while the poor horse is running?
First off, I don't think the horse is from Detroit.
Dave, I'm going to have you jump in right after Andrea finishes her racing form here. Your thoughts for Eddie?
I completely agree. I love Nyquist. I know he's the favorite 3-to-1, Edzo, but I love the fact that Doug O'Neill trained him, who also trained, if I'm not mistaken, I'll Have Another, which I...
Right, I won 2/3 of the Triple Crown a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I won big on him at the Derby. That was the year I actually went.
You got to get help.
Well, you know what? I can't argue with the AD.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at the way that the race, at least now, and again, there's a chance of some rain here on Saturday, which would really change my philosophy on the Derby. Because, look, I'll say this, is if the track comes up muddy or sloppy or if there's some wetness in the track, I don't think anybody can beat Exaggerator. Okay, so full disclosure, if that is the case, like if the track is muddy or if it's off at all, I'm going in all on Exaggerator. But if it's a fast track, I think Nyquist certainly has the tactical speed. And what's wrong with taking 3-to-1 on your money if you're going to be wagering or getting your feet wet? So to me, there's not a lot. I mean, I think there's a little bit more speed in this race than people are leading on. And I think Nyquist is very tactical, where he doesn't need to be on the lead. He's breaking out of post position 13. A lot of the speed is coming from the outside. So for me, right now, I'd be going to the windows on Nyquist.
Completely agree with you. Also, I still like More Spirit, Bob Baffert's horse. 12-to-1, not bad odds.
Yeah, like I said, AD, I think with the speed being to the outside, it'll be really interesting to see if any of these horses, look, they're going 1.25 miles for the first time in their young lives. And with all the speed to the outside, will somebody from one of the inner posts, you know, from 13 or 14 in, float, you know, move out a little bit and force those horses that are all out there, you know, from 14 to 20, instead of running 1.25 miles, well, they have to, you know, run 1.5 miles, you know, because they're going to be so far out there. So the tactics of the jockeys will be very interesting to watch. And, you know, look, there's a lot of confidence in Bob Baffert. How can you argue? He comes off of, you know, the Triple Crown last year and all the experience that he
has. Yeah, he's kind of good. He's kind of good. He's the Coach Q of trainers. The prognosticator of ponies, Eddie Olczyk, with us. And, Dave, your thoughts?
Well, the only thing, because I was looking More Spirit also, the 17-hole, no Derby winner has ever come out of that. But I guess...
Just a number, David. Just a number.
There's always a first time, right, Eddie? We know that.
Absolutely.
What about those speed horses, and specifically Dancing Candy on the outside?
Coming from a 20 post position, you got a lot of speed. It's a very good place to go, because then if you can just break and cut right over, you're going to be able to save a lot of ground. But again, I mean, the tactics of the horses on the inside, if you break a step slow, the complexion of the race completely changed. So you got to imagine that the message is going to be get right out there and run as far and as fast as you can. And again, most astute handicappers and people that follow this on a daily basis don't think that there's a lot of pace in the race. So we have about 7 or 8 horses that really like to come from way out of it. So in order for that to happen, the speed would have to come back or stop, and those other closers would have to come in, like, you know, Moe's Tom, who happens to be owned by Tom Benson, the owner of the New Orleans Saints and the Pelicans in the NBA. You know, you have exaggerators, another horse that likes to come from way out of it. So I think if you're looking and trying to break it down, I don't think you can go wire to wire and win the Derby. I think you got to look for a horse that can kind of sit in the middle of the pace. I like Nyquist. I like Gun Runner right now on a fast track, a horse that can be tactical and just sit off the pace. But, you know, Dancing Candy sitting on the outside certainly can dictate the whole race. Or if he doesn't break, that can certainly play into it, because I don't care if it's 5 feet out or 5 feet down the lane, it can't have an effect on, you know, can't have an effect on the race.
Got a couple of 51s in here, Oscar nominated in Trojan Nation. Do they need to take an Uber to win?
You know what, Trojan Nation, he's breaking from the one post, right? I don't have
yep.
my number.
Yep.
One.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's ever, you know, won the Derby from the number one post position, or I should say that has been a very, very, very long time. He didn't run a bad race in his last. It was on an off track. He's another horse that's going to come from way out of it. Oscar nominated looks like he's probably a little over his head. You got to be in it to win it. So you just never know. It is horse racing.
Edzo, do you like Dale Roman's horse, Brody's Cause?
He's another one, AD, that I think is probably going to be a pretty good distance out of it. But Dale Roman's grew up, I think, only a couple of miles from Churchill down. So, you know, he's going to have the positive karma from the neighborhood coming, you know, for him on Saturday.
Right.
But I did like him last year in Breeders' Cup Juvenile, both him and Exaggerator. And, you know, Brody's Cause just beat Exaggerator up on the placing. But he's certainly got a shot. Look, if they go out there, if these horses go out there, and I don't want to get too inside horse racing, but if you see when they put the splits up on NBC, so meaning the time's up in the corner, if you see anything less than 1:11, there's a pretty good chance the pace is going to fall apart. So if they're going 1:11 and 3, 1:12 or whatever, it's going to be really hard for those horses to close in coming in that last half a mile. But if you see 1:10 and change, 1:09 or something like that, you got a pretty good idea. If you like horses that come from behind, that's what you really want to be looking at as far as time-wise. So if it's 11 and under, there might be a pretty good chance that the pace collapses and comes off and has a chance of winning. Look, it's almost like, and I got a little jump in my step because I got a haircut before I left. I got
nice,
a little
good
bit
call.
Of a different do going on.
Yeah,
and,
good call.
You know, I put a little extra shine on my shoes because I got to take out those silver streaks I got going. You know what I mean, Steve?
Yeah, it's not gonna last in the barn, but I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean.
Yeah,
so, AD,
yeah.
I heard you got a little new cut, a new do going.
I got a little do as well.
She looks great. Yeah. I'm glad you're not here.
Right.
You'd be all over.
Bye, Adore.
Again, it's Exaggerator if it's a mutter, Nyquist if it's a speed track, and if you want Trojan Nation, he's got a hoof hike. It's like hitchhiking, but it's for horses. NBC Saturday for you, what time?
Well, hold on a second. We're on the NBCSN this afternoon, 3 to 5 for 2 hours. And then tomorrow we're on NBCSN for 4 hours. I don't know the time. And then Saturday we're on NBCSN and NBC all day long. So just, you know, go to your TV guide if anybody has a TV guide anymore. I don't know if they have that.
Yeah, you're right. Your plug was way better than mine.
And I don't have any in the back of my head. That's real stuff. Just I know that was a little subtle shot by you there.
Oh, you're the best.
You
stop
look good.
It. You're the best. That's the great Eddie Olczyk.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah,
Katie Couric in studio in about 10 minutes with an important documentary. She voices the creator of the documentary as well in studio. Big, big hit at Sundance. Dean Richards time. Janet Jackson, Andrea, is pregnant at 50.
First child.
At 50.
Yeah. That's...
At 50.
I know. She wanted to... Remember, she canceled a bunch of her shows, including ones here in Chicago that were supposed to be at the Allstate Arena because she wanted to have a baby, and, you know, she wanted to make sure her body was ready and prepared, and her doctor
Well, I hope
said,
she's okay.
I hope she is, too.
She's in great shape.
But 50.
But 50, yeah. There's a lot of
If you have a child at 50, is it like an 8-year-old?
You know,
or do you have like a normal like
this is, some
you know,
people are in
baby.
Better shape this, in their 50s than they were in their 30s.
But this is a really good question because, and we can ask Dr. Stryker this, because she at one point said, you're okay. I mean, every doctor is different, but 47, 48 is the cutoff. Some doctors earlier, some doctors later. But for her, she said 47, 48 And after that, you really, really have to be careful.
Yeah, well, you know, along with not being able to conceive, once you do conceive, it's dangerous for the mother and the baby, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not easy to have an 8-year-old.
No, and then think about two. So when she's 65, of course it's Janet Jackson, though. You know, she's going to have people helping her. She's going to have nannies.
Well, like it this way, if she has a baby at 50, when she's 100, the child will be 50. See what I did there?
Look at you with your math.
813. Dean, your thoughts on Janet Jackson? Really? Dean? Over? Dean? Over?
Hello there. Sorry.
Dean, where were you?
I was just sitting right here, but I thought we were going on later today.
No, you're going on now because Katie Kirk will be joining us soon.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You got to pay attention to the memo and come to the rehearsals. You know how important the rehearsals are. What are you hearing about Janet Jackson having a child at 50?
Second trimester is what's being reported now for Janet Jackson, according to E! Online.
Has her uterus commented?
She not heard anything from her uterus just yet. She posted a video not long ago saying that she and her husband are working with a fertility specialist.
Right.
Wanted to work
on... Is that
on
David Copperfield? She's 50.
A family. Turns out that he did put a magic cloth over her and waved a magic wand, if that's what the kids are calling it now. And so she is, well, she hasn't made the official announcement, but the word is that that's what's happened. First child, 50 years old.
Well, God bless her. I hope she's okay.
It happens, you know, risky, but it sounds like they are taking every single precaution and have every single specialist on this. So.
Dean, sponsored by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Health Care Center and the Wintrust Community Banks. Folks, good enough to sponsor the 8 o'clock hour. What else is going on in show business?
I know you are a huge Oprah Winfrey fan.
Yeah, well, we were married for a while.
How many times you've said to yourself, because you pretty much lost everything in the divorce.
I did, yeah.
If only there was some way I could own a piece of Oprah history.
Well, I can't anymore. She's got all mine.
Well, she's there is an opportunity for you to grab a little something. Steve, the actual chairs that audience members sat in at her former West Loop studio are going on auction today, an online auction at 2 o'clock today. You can...
Well, hold on a second. Hold on. Why would I want the chairs the audience sat in?
Because Oprah was near them.
Well, that's this. Well, what's the money go to?
Oprah aura near these chairs. The money goes
money
to...
Go, I hope it's going to Oprah.
It goes to... Because she's barely scraping by, right, probably. Right. The Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy Foundation, her school for girls in South Africa.
Yeah, well, I hope it goes to... So good, then you should buy them. It's fine.
Wouldn't it be cool to have in your double wide, you know, people come over to, you know, play Parcheesi?
But then what would I do with the chairs from Tic-Tac-Doe? Because I still have those.
Well, you can mix and match.
Can I sit in front of all of you guys in the double wide and go, you get a car, and you get a car,
sure,
and you get a car?
Sure, absolutely. Be great.
I'm not going to give you guys a car.
The bids start at $25. So, you know, these possibly very affordable to have these pieces of...
Which chair is this, Oprah? This is the chair Helen sat in from Downers Grove.
Oprah.screenbid.com.
Can I just give...
Don't try to pour cold water on my enthusiasm for this.
Can I just write a check for the people and tell them I don't want a chair?
I'd like to make a donation to the school.
To keep a chair. Keep your chairs.
Keep your chairs. Keep your furniture. Put them in the dumpster like everyone else does when they move.
All right, you got another one for me?
I do. You know, Donald Trump may be very happy about being the presumptive candidate right now. Rolling Stones not so happy that he is playing their music at his campaign rallies. At the Indiana primary rally, they played Start Me Up.
Yep.
The only thing that started was a cease and desist order from the Rolling Stones legal team saying that they do not want their music played at his events. So this adds the Stones now to Adele and Steven Tyler, number of other artists who have told Donald Trump they do not want their music being used at his events under any circumstances.
And then you knew this was serious when Keith Richards got involved and said, you tell Harry Truman, I don't want anybody playing our music.
The buck stops here.
So, all right, you want to hang around with Katie Kirk?
I would love that.
All right, stand by. We'll come back. Dean will join us for the Katie Kirk conversation here in a little bit.
If I have my gun with me, I don't fear anything.
The NRA was quoted as saying, that's the cost of liberty.
Anyone who's on the terrorist watch list should not lose their Second Amendment right.
If you're on the terror watch list?
That's a good one.
Firearms in the hands of good people save lives.
More guns does not make you safer.
You're with us or against us.
8:22 in the morning. How about a balanced, fair look at the problem with guns in this city and in this country? You know, we talk about this all the time, Dave. You know this.
Mm-hmm.
This city of Chicago is one of the greatest cities in the world. And what's the national and worldwide image now? You're going to come here that somebody's going to shoot you. You know, that's not who we are.
Nope. But unfortunately...
There's a documentary that debuted at Sundance. It got thunderous standing ovations. They were how do we only get one microphone for you guys? Can we buy it? Here. Somebody run over to Best Buy and get a second microphone.
There we go.
Thank you.
Not that you guys don't like each other, but I think we do.
We felt like a girl group all of a sudden.
Yeah, what's with that? So the Spice Girls doing the interview.
Yeah.
Katie Couric's here. Nice to see you again.
Nice
it's been
to
a long
see
time.
You. I
think
know.
The last time I saw you was in New York at Z100.
Oh, my gosh.
A long time ago. Stephanie Sodig is here, the producer, director, writer behind this. Stephanie, what's the inspiration for you? I mean, I know documentaries are in your blood, but why this?
I mean, the story really resonated for me because I grew up in Brookfield, Connecticut, which is right next to Newtown.
Yeah.
So, and I was pregnant when the Sandy Hook massacre happened. The idea really originated with Katie, though. She called me and said, you know, how does this keep happening? And, you know, can we take a look at this? And so, I had thought, hasn't the story been covered already? We hear, you know, about gun violence quite a bit. And when we started digging in, I realized, you know, that... We really have barely scratched the surface. I mean, the things that we unearthed were just so surprising.
And it's not stuff you're going to see everywhere else. It's not stuff that's been covered before or been beaten into the ground. You know, Katie, Newtown, as parents, as most of us are, Newtown was the worst day in America since 9/11 for me. I mean, it just made me physically ill. And the fact that nobody was able to get anything accomplished after that is beyond heartbreaking. It's sick and disgusting.
You know, that's really what motivated me. I went up to Newtown after Sandy Hook, and that Sunday evening, I actually was invited into the home of Mark and Jackie Barden, who lost their son Daniel, and their whole family had descended into their home, and it was so heartbreaking to see his older son, Daniel's brother, you know, just have to deal with this, and sister, and parents, and then I thought, everyone said it's a watershed moment. Yeah. Something's going to happen.
Right.
And yet nothing did.
Well,
and
what did is people bought more guns.
Yes, exactly, which happens after most mass shootings. And I said to Stephanie, I don't understand. And I think that's what really drives me to do the documentary films that we've done together. I did Fed Up with Stephanie in 2014 about childhood obesity. It's a very simple question. Why?
Right.
Why is this happening? Why is America getting heavier and heavier and more and more unhealthy if we've been talking about obesity for 30 years? And the same with gun violence. I said, why does this keep happening? Why, you know, what is it going to take? And I just wanted to kind of peel the layers off the onion and see what were the obstacles that were keeping us from getting gun violence in this country under control.
And again, and this becomes a political football. Nobody is going to be able to walk into your house and take your gun if you're a legal gun owner. So drop that argument.
Touch that argument in the film that we did. We said, okay, everyone has a Second Amendment right to buy and own a gun. So taking that aside, how can we, you know, do something reasonable that will keep guns out of the hands of the wrong people?
Right. And Stephanie, this week we saw a statistic. There was a horrible story. This little two-year-old's riding in the back of the car, grabs a gun from the back seat, shoots mom in the back and kills her while she's driving the car. And a couple days later, we see that toddlers have killed more people this year than radical Muslim terrorists in this country by having access to guns. It's insane.
And I think that's how we have to treat it. So you stop. I think if we take politics out of the equation and treat it as a public health epidemic, that perhaps will make a lot more headway. I mean, if 33,000 people were being killed by anything else in this country, we would have acted by now.
Of course.
That's what Mark Barden says. And I think one of the things this film shows is the wide-reaching tentacles of the gun lobby. Stephanie mentioned it's a public health issue, but the gun lobby has prohibited the CDC from even studying gun violence in this country for fear, I think, of what they'll find, and for fear that that will contribute to the discussion, God forbid. So that's just one of the things that surfaces in this documentary, I think.
One of the biggest problems here in Chicago, of course, are gangbangers, and gangbangers having access to guns. But what we know is access to guns is too easy for everybody. And when something like Newtown happens, and we go to more guns in this country than there are people in this country, men, women, and children, is it fear-mongering? Is it the gun lobby you're talking about trying to sell more guns? Does it come down to money? What do we find out?
I think so. I mean, you do. You see every time that there is a mass shooting that gun sales go up. And so the gun lobby has instilled this fear in what's really a very small percentage of gun owners. I mean, when you look at it, the NRA really only speaks for 5% of gun owners at best. And so what we're seeing is that it's not that more people are owning guns, but it's that a smaller population is owning more guns, because there's this fear that's being instilled that guns are going to be banned or the government's going to somehow.
You know what's funny? I don't know if this is in under the gun or not, but the thing that strikes me is, because I grew up around hunters. I grew up in upstate New York around people that love to hunt, and collectors and shooters and things like that. And I got no argument with anybody that's a legal gun owner, but legal gun owners have to hear the argument that if you don't come to some common sense solution to push the NRA to do the right thing on some minor changes and to stop pushing it the way it is, you're going to run into a problem where the politics and the wave of sentiment in this country is going to change, and there are going to be some draconian measures taken about your guns, right?
Well, yeah, what's interesting to realize, though, is 74% of NRA members actually favor background checks.
Right.
They're shocked and appalled that you can be on the terror watch list and yet buy guns in this country legally.
Dumb.
So I think that when you look at, and one of the gratifying things about this film is Stephanie and I have had many gun owners come up to us and say, thank you for representing us. We're reasonable, rational gun owners, and we are so happy to have our point of view represented in this film.
Katie, you've covered stories like this for years. I mean, and it just becomes a number, and the face doesn't even matter in many cases anymore. What would the solution be? Because you've seen mothers and families coming up to you saying, we need to do something. We're going to march. What can we do?
Well, I think you're never going to completely eradicate gun violence. But I think, you know, one, I want to make sure we talk about Chicago, because we, you know, a big portion of this film is about Chicago. And I think Bad Apple Gun Dealers, first of all, they're 5% of
5% of gun stores are responsible for selling 90% of guns recovered from crime scenes.
And so these Bad Apple Gun Dealers, which we profile one, Chuck's here in Chicago, they sell dozens and dozens of guns, no questions asked, which are then resold in Chicago. And so there's just more guns than people. And I went to a support group called Purpose Over Pain in Father Flager's church to talk to parents who had lost children to gun violence. And what's really important, I think, to note is they said, you hear the local news reporters say it was gang related.
Right.
Well, oftentimes it wasn't gang related. Oftentimes
right.
These kids are caught in the crossfire. And these are parents who are just like all of us in this room. They are trying to do the right thing. They're really concerned about the safety of their kids. Their kids are good kids. They're going to school. They're trying to, you know, build a life for their families. And, you know, for us to marginalize every victim of gun violence in the inner city by saying it's gang related, I think does them a real disservice.
Well, it's absolutely factually wrong. 99% of the people in the toughest neighborhoods in Chicago and New York and L.A. and everywhere around the country just want to do the right thing. They want to get up in the morning. They want to have their kids have a chance to maximize their lives and to go to school and do sports or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're just worried about their kids getting to school and getting home. And some of these kids are getting shot in their own house.
Right.
So you know, a bullet comes through a wall or a bullet comes through a window in a drive-by.
April 21st, Chicago had 1,000 shootings, more than L.A. and New York combined for the same time period. So, and it's just a couple of neighborhoods. It's not, you know, that's what's most troubling, too.
Under the Gun airs for free on Epics. Epics, by the way, is terrific. I think you ought to pay for it, to be honest with you. But
you'll be able to do that down the road.
Okay. It's Sunday night, May 15th at 7 o'clock.
And you can go at all day on epics.com. You can stream it all day long.
Oh, beautiful.
You know, for you cord cutters out there.
All right, excellent. And by the way, the premiere is tonight at the Chicago Cultural Center. I know you guys got to get to TV, but we can
we have time.
Okay.
I love being here. This is so fun.
And how about the studio?
And I love radio, by the way.
Well, yes, you're great at it.
So how about the studio? And I love Chicago.
Oh, this is a great
My mom
city.
Used to say, you should move to Chicago, because she used to live here when she met my father many years ago.
Well, you should have moved to Chicago. It's not
too late. I tried to get a job here, and they wouldn't hire me. The local news guy would not hire me.
Which station?
Like,
yeah.
I think it was the NBC affiliate.
Yeah, we fired him.
A guy named Dick Lobo.
Yeah, Dick's out.
Anyway, he's really nice, and we became friendly when I worked at NBC. But, I mean, I really, really tried to get a job here.
Did you ever call Dick and go, I'm doing fine, and hang up on him?
No, I think I called up and I said, nah, 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 nah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Things worked out okay.
Do you know who I think I am? That's usually what I say.
I usually go, do you know who I used to be?
Yeah, I say that, too.
It's 8:32. We're going to continue with a big story in just a second, again, with the guests. Under the Gun premieres Sunday on Epics. Epics free preview weekend. It's Stephanie Sotig and it's Katie Couric. And when we come back, I want to ask you about the Bosleys in particular. Okay. First, quick break and then back. The big story continues with Under the Gun being the discussion. A very important film we insist that all of you see, and we're expecting a report. Now here's Andrea.
Yeah, big story. We're going to continue our conversation with Stephanie and Katie Couric. I guess, what was the thing that most surprised you when you were researching this and when you were learning? I mean, and the numbers and the stats keep piling up. But what really was your aha moment where you both, either of you said, oh my gosh, I can't believe that?
I mean, I remember the first one, really, was when I started digging in and when I saw that 40% of guns that are purchased in this country are purchased without a background check. And that just blew my mind. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And we do on the film unearth so many more, you know, mind-blowing things like that you can, if you're on the terror watch list, you can't board a plane, but you can buy a gun in this country.
It's just dumb. You have to laugh. It's just dumb. How can that even be a rule? And how can anybody go, well, that seems right?
Well, I think, you know, people like Rand Paul and, you know, other politicians, Lindsey Graham, that I've sort of heard talk about this, feel that some people are mistakenly put on the terror watch list, and that should not deprive them of their Second Amendment rights. But my feeling is, get off the terror watch list, even if you have to go through some bureaucracy and then maybe buy a gun, rather than risk the chance of people on the terror watch list legitimately purchasing firearms. I don't know. It just makes sense to me.
Katie Couric, you get asked to do everything, and it's a part of the privilege of a great career and who you are, but you have to decide where you're going to put your time and what you're going to do. Obviously, being a parent, this matters to you. But are you at a point now where you're saying, I think we can actually move the ball on this based on what you see in Under the Gun?
I mean, I think so. I think what you're seeing is this groundswell of a grassroots movement. You have Moms Demand Action, which was started by Shannon Watts, a woman in Indianapolis, and now there are chapters in every state and millions of members. There are organizations like Everytown that has been spearheaded by Mike Bloomberg to put sort of dollars into supporting candidates who have sort of, you know, positions about reasonable gun regulation. And so I really do think we're witnessing a slow sea change, because I think a lot of social movements now are starting with social media. You know, there's a lot of negative things about social media, but there are a lot of positive in that they can coalesce like-minded people and get them motivated to really move the needle in a certain way. And so I think I do get the sense that people are kind of saying, hey, let's talk about this. And I think, you know, it doesn't have to be the polarizing issue that the gun lobby wants it to be. You know, they gin up some of the more extremist members, and that's where they get paranoid and they say registration will lead to confiscation. They're going to come get our guns. It's a slippery slope. When you see the common ground of 74, do you think I've had enough coffee, by the way? Of 74%
no,
of the gun lobby.
No,
74% of the
Katie,
gun lobby.
You're
no, but you know, you see that there is a lot of room for agreement in the Venn diagram of gun owners and anti-gun people. There is a lot of overlap, and I think that's what we have to take advantage of. And I think our goal in making this film is to give people the knowledge they need. They hear things like straw purchase, bad apple gun dealers, gun show loophole, proceed default loophole, right? And or default proceed loophole, where after 3 days that the FBI doesn't have time to do a background check, like the guy in Charleston that time ran out, and that's why that guy was able to purchase a gun.
Well, you know, the thing I'd add, too, and again, I really want gun owners to hear this, because I defend legal gun owners. As I said, I grew up around them. The fact of the matter is, nobody's coming to take your gun, as we said, and you have to stop, and you have to just put common sense and layer it over all of this. We all want the same thing. We don't want kids to be killed. We don't want your neighbor to be killed. We don't want somebody that got fired to walk into work and shoot a bunch of people today. Gun owners don't want it. You don't want it. This government can't get out of its way to solve anything. Do you actually think they're going to turn over an amendment of the Constitution and the Second Amendment? So just break it down to that. Your guns are not going to be taken away. So you're able to keep your guns. So don't you want better chances for the rest of us to get on a plane or to go to work and to be safe? We all want the same thing.
We do.
So let's get after it.
And I think this film is very much for gun owners. I mean, we just had a screening, and a woman came up to me, and she said, I'm an NRA cardholder. I had no idea this was going on, and I'm appalled. So I find that incredibly exciting.
That is exciting.
I think what she was referring to is not only the CDC not being able to study this as a public health issue, but really sort of malevolent kind of underhanded things, like making sure the ATF doesn't have computerized records. So when it comes to tracing guns that were used in the commission of a crime, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. We show the headquarters, and it is absurd that they have been prohibited, thanks to lobbying from the gun lobby, to have their records computerized. Yes. It's absurd.
We hear the term, and part of that, a common sense gun laws. We hear that all the time, especially in Illinois, common sense gun legislation or laws that need to be on the books. Do you hope that this film will be a catalyst at least for that, the basic steps?
I do. I think that there's some really low-hanging fruit, like universal background checks, which we see, you know, work. And I think so. I think documentary films have really shown to be an incredible vehicle for change. I mean, you know, we refer to the Blackfish effect and what happened at SeaWorld. And, you know, and even, you know, Fed Up. We get mail all the time where people stop us to say how much Fed Up changed the way they ate. So I love the idea that we can, you know, arm people with the truth, because up until now we've been really fed a narrative that was constructed by the NRA.
The good news here is we've gone through this entire two-segment interview without mentioning Trump or Hillary, for that matter, and we won't. But before we go, I mentioned the Bosleys, and just last question before you guys have to run out the door. Tell me about the Bosleys in the movie.
Yeah, so Pamela and Tommy Bosley lost their son, Terrell. He was a phenomenal kid who was doing well in school and played on every sports team. And he was shot outside of church, of all places. He was going in for band practice at church. And he was shot and killed. And what's interesting about the Bosleys is we wanted to juxtapose the response from the country to the Bosleys versus what happened in Newtown. And, you know, when you see what's happening in Chicago over a 4th of July weekend, it's the equivalent of a mass shooting almost every day. And you know, during that, 4th of July here is not necessarily the best place to be.
Well, no, but again, in these neighborhoods where people would like to go outside and have their picnic and be able to take their kids outside.
Yeah. Have you heard this? They told us when we were here, Father Flaker said that they call it the hunting season in summer. And he said, you know, when the temperatures go up, it becomes a really difficult place to live. And we just found that heartbreaking. And so to see the outpouring of support that came from the country, rightfully so, by all means, right? Newtown deserved that outpouring of support. But why isn't that happening in Chicago?
Right.
Why aren't they not getting the same support?
And the Bosleys are phenomenal people. I mean, I felt so privileged to sit with those parents and to be able to share their story.
And the courage of them to sit here and go, yeah, tell our story.
The courage not only to deal with the loss of their son, but then to become activists and to really want to do something about it.
God bless them.
They are incredibly inspiring.
Thank you guys for doing this.
Thanks for having
us. This was so fun.
Yeah,
I like this radio thing. You don't have to put on makeup. I like
it. Actually, I'm wearing full makeup.
You look great.
Thanks. I appreciate it. It's Under the Gun and airs for free May 15th, Sunday, on epics.com. 7 o'clock, but you can stream it all day. And
no, I lied about that. You can only start streaming it at 8. I'm sorry.
Okay, well,
my bad.
I'll give you the money. But go to epics.com, sign up. It's good for you. But make sure you see Under the Gun and tell your friends about it and spread it socially as well, if you would. All right? We'll take a break. We'll come back. Traffic. And thank you to Katie and Stephanie. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Ryan Dempster.
There's
a 1-1 to
Freeman. Oh, he caught it. Right into the palm of Dempster's glove. Ooh, that is a little smile there from Dempster.
What would Harry say right now about this win?
Well, I got to tell you, there's a lot of champagne in here. I haven't seen this much champagne since my wedding. We had a party just like this. It was phenomenal. Go, go!
That was outstanding.
In the old days, Dave, it felt like it would never end. The bad stuff.
The bad stuff, yes.
Now it feels like the good stuff isn't going to end.
I mean, you wouldn't get your 20th win till maybe
August.
Well, it felt that way, yeah.
It's a good time to be a baseball fan anytime, but it's a very good time to be a baseball fan in Chicago as Ryan Dempster joins us. I'll tell you what, Demps, it's what you said, you know, opening week. These guys go to the park and they just look like, yeah, we're going to win. Absolutely, we're going to win.
Yeah, they do, don't they? They sure do bring that confidence. And I'll tell you what, you know, playing a lot of years in the big leagues, that was probably the most important thing you can do is come to the field with confidence. And these guys just, it's seeping out their pores, and they believe it. And they're ready to go out there every day and whoop some butt. And they went into Pittsburgh and took care of a really good team. And getting off to a huge start like this is a great thing. Long way to go, but they're having a lot of fun right now.
They didn't just take care of them, though. They absolutely smoked them in three games out there. And it seemed like also they weren't going to back down if any of the stuff that carried over from the wild card game started up again. They had a couple of hit batters in that first game, and it just kind of set a tone, it seemed like, for the series. Yesterday, Pittsburgh was yapping a little bit again, and I mean, that's got to just crank things up, right, for the next time they're going to play again on the next homestand. I mean, this really shaping up to be a fun rivalry this season.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, that's one thing you saw last year was with this team is just the way the boys just really came together. And then when you're going to have a tight-knit group like that and you're going to try and push, whether it's, you know, throwing at somebody or taking a guy out hard, it's just going to elevate that game and that rivalry. And that's a great thing for baseball to see these two teams. You know, it was always the Cardinals and the Cubs, but now to see the Cardinals and the Pirates, the Cubs and the Pirates, this kind of whole NL Central division rivalry is a lot of fun to watch. And these guys won't back down from anybody. And I don't blame them, man. I walk in that locker room, but these are some big dudes. They're not afraid of anybody. So it's fun to see them go out there. And you know, and really, if you look at the series, you can talk about the runs scored and all that, but the starting pitching has just been, it's been incredible what these guys have been doing. The bullpen as well, but the starting pitching, just setting the tone night in, night out, and just feeding off each other to go out there and win ball games. A lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it's been remarkable with this series, Hamill and Arrieta, and then yesterday with Lester. Now let's fast forward. Four games with Washington, the two best teams record-wise. You can certainly make the case these are legitimately the two best teams. What should Cub fans, Ryan, be watching in this series this week at Wrigley?
Yeah, I think you should be watching some really good baseball. And I think, you know, whatever, regardless of what happens, like, you know, if one team goes out there, and if we go out there and sweep the Nationals, or we go out there and win three or four, we split the series, or whatever the results are really, they're great, and they matter, obviously, you know, in the standings, but it just gives you a gauge of where you're at against another really good team, you know, and I think you're going to see some good baseball again. You're going to see a chance to go out there this weekend and watch arguably the best player in the game, and Bryce Harper right now, and how we contain him and how we go about pitching to him. And they got a really good baseball team. They're playing really well, and it'll be a good gauge as to where we're at. But it's also, you know, it's early, and these games matter just as much as, you know, the game on April 1st matters as much as the game on September 30th. They all matter the same in the standings. But, you know, you got a long way to go before the end of the season to get too far ahead of yourselves. But it always is fun when you're playing that other team. I always remember this. When you're doing well and you're playing that other team that's doing really well, there's a sense of pride there. You know, you want to go out there and let them know you're not going to come into our place and win ball games, and I expect to see that tonight. Guys go out there and have a great ball game.
You know, you get into May, and it's different than April, because May, for baseball fans, you start to strategize a little bit. You go trade deadlines down the road. Now we got teams that we know are not going to be trying to build for next year in the future. We got teams that are going to try to tweak it and get it right. So John Danks gets released by the Sox, and you know they're going to be looking for probably a left-handed bat and making a change here or there. The Cubs are so deep, Demps, that if they want to make a change or want to find a little reinforcement somewhere, they've got some people they can move, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's all, you know, that's the one thing about, you know, really good people running a team, which we have, and Theo and Jed and Jason and, you know, and everybody there, and Randy Bush and these guys, that they're always looking to improve the team. So whatever, if an opportunity arises to be able to make your team better, you always got to evaluate that, do that. Just because you're sitting there, you know, with a 20-6 record and you're feeling good, doesn't mean that something down the road, I mean, you saw how early things can happen with Schwarber, injuries can happen, or all of a sudden somebody's hot start, you know, tails off and they're not quite doing what they're supposed to be doing, and you got to make an improvement. But, you know, the way the team's set up with the depth and the ability for so many people to play different positions, you know, I love our team. I love what we got on the roster and the players that we got. And you know, you don't see it as a team that needs to add a bunch, but you never know. And if it's that little, sometimes it's that little tiny small piece, that little role player that comes in and does something special, and great things end up happening because of it.
And we saw an example of that in Pittsburgh. They lose Hayward. Caesar goes down with an injury, and yet they come up with a sweep. Real quick, do you pitch Daniel Murphy any different this time than last fall?
Yeah, well, he's still locked in. He's been locked in for about 2 months. But, you know, I think definitely, you know, you make those adjustments. And that's the one thing about this pitching staff, and especially Chris Bosio and Mike Borzello.
Inside on the hands, Demps, every pitch.
Well, and if it's not on the hands, it's okay if it's a little further in.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't mind that. You know, it's okay to just let them know that, hey, listen, we'll give you this part of the plate, but we're not going to give you both sides. And I'm a big believer in that. You know, me, I'm not afraid to go inside on somebody if I feel like I need a back off. That's always a really effective, good game plan if you want to approach it that way.
I'm telling you now, Demps isn't lying about that. There was a game years ago now, but I'm waving at him from, like, the seats right behind home plate. He threw at me. Yeah, he threw at me. Demps dung me. He dinged me just right off the shoulder. Didn't hurt that bad. Sure, I cried a little.
Take your base.
It was more of a gravity ball by then.
Yeah, that's what the doctor told me. Yeah. It's Ryan Dempster getting it done, teaching us more baseball than we'll ever know, and we appreciate it, my friend. We'll see you at the park.
Absolutely, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. Demps. Look at Demps. Remember when Demps hit me?
I do, but you didn't take your base.
I tried to, and that's when security threw me out of the park. That's when it got really bad.
I was going to ask him if he got all of his suits back. Remember? A few days ago, the Cubs were wearing those crazy suits.
Well, yeah. They wore them home.
Yeah, they got to keep them.
Do they have to wear those every road trip now?
Do you see Lester after the game yesterday? He's got the deer heads on his suit. That's the pattern.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Oh, the sun shines bright over old Kentucky.
9:10 Kentucky Derby, one of the biggest days of the year for sports fans that are truly sports friends. And our friend Howard Sudbury joins us. How are you, Bill?
Steve, I'm doing well.
Nice to see
you. Got my theme song. I like to have a theme song.
There you go. You're here on behalf of Arlington, and you do great work at Arlington. But I just got to say, and you know how I feel this way, I don't get out to Arlington more than one or two times a year. I wish it was more, but I just don't make it. But I'm telling you, I love, love, love Arlington International Racecourse. I love what it means to the community. I love the jobs it provides. It's a family atmosphere. It's a beautiful. We need Arlington. And in the middle of all the political nonsense that goes on in this country, I wish people would get out of the way and just allow Mr. Dutchesswa to continue to do what he does. Because here's some news, kids. Mr. Dutchesswa's got his own money. He doesn't need the aggravation. He doesn't need the aggravation of Arlington. He does it because he loves it and because he believes in it. And I just think it's important to say that.
Well, I agree with everything you said because it's all true. You know, Mr. D, he has his own business, as you said, and his own money. But his office is right down the hall from mine. So that shows you where his passion and his heart is. It's in Arlington. And in 1985, when the racetrack burnt down, he and his family, they didn't have to rebuild it for however many, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars it cost.
Right.
It's a beautiful place. It's good for tourism. It is a family place, which you don't say very often when you're talking about a racetrack.
Yeah, and how about taking your kids and your grandparents and your kids, and everybody goes outside and gets some fresh air.
Yes.
What a crazy thought that is.
Yeah, and everybody, you know, it's a social occasion when you go to the racetrack. There's about 25 minutes between races. There's entertainment. There's live music. There's great food.
People actually talk to each other.
They sometimes. They're usually in their phones now. They text even when they're sitting next to each other.
Right. But
in fact, we should text this interview.
We could.
Let's live text it.
We just read text back and forth. But I'm a big believer in Arlington, and I hope you can go at least more than a couple of times. And I'm going to try to make it several more this summer. David,
I'm heading out Saturday. As a matter of fact, I know we'll talk about that. What's this Arlington Racing Club?
That is a phenomenal thing that is really taken off. We might start a second one. For $500, you had the chance to buy into a racehorse. So we have 70-some people, but it's a one-time expense. So you don't have to pay the monthly training fees. The budget comes out of that 500 times 70, at $35,000 or something like that. So you get a season pass. You get to go watch the horse train. You get to bring family and friends when it runs for $500.
So you're buying shares in the pony, kind of, huh?
Yes, except it's a non-for-profit. So if there's profit, that'll go to charity. But
you can actually tell people you're an owner.
Yeah. And then, you know, you get updates by email. There's a blog. They'll see the invoices to see what it was like if you actually owned the horse and had to pay the freight yourself.
Sure.
So that's cool. So we might start a second one. So keep an eye on arlingtonpark.com and you can get in.
Do you get to go in the winner's circle if the horse
wins?
Oh,
yeah. Oh, that's the point. I mean, we want the horse to win. Larry Ravelli, the leading trainer at Arlington last year, is going to train the horse. We're looking for him now, him or her, the horse, and we'll have one soon. And, yeah, the object is to win.
It's nice.
The thrill of victory.
It's a cool idea. All right, so let's get after it. Kentucky Derby on Saturday. Who do you like, Andrea?
I like Nyquist. I know he's 3-1. I know he's in a good post position. I love Nyquist. I also like More Spirit. And I also like Dale Roman's horse, Brody's Cause. Yeah, because Roman's traded Little Mike, who won the million year before last, right?
3 years, I think.
Okay, well, yeah.
You got a full field. Is that going to change the chemistry?
Oh, sure it does. You got 20 horses running around a racetrack. You know, there's so much luck involved. All the horses you mentioned, I think, are win candidates. Nyquist is undefeated. Hard to knock an undefeated horse. He's done nothing wrong. I will probably try to beat him. I like Exaggerator a little bit, because I like to exaggerate.
Well, Eddie Olchek said if it's muddy at all, if there's any precip, he's all over Exaggerator.
Yeah, well, he's won 4 times, and I think 2 of them were on off tracks, including the Santa Anita Derby last time, so he really moves up in the slop. I think it's supposed to be okay down there weather-wise, but back to the 20 horses in the race. I mean, you can get bumped, you can get trapped, you can get blocked, you can go wide on both turns. Anything can happen to get the horse beat. But that's what's cool about the Derby is that they get one chance in their life when they're 3 years old on the first Saturday in May to win the Kentucky Derby.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. By the way, have you ever thought about, I'm an idea guy. Have you ever thought about renting fancy hats out there so you don't have to bring your own? What happens if you're a lady, you get out of the car, you don't have a fancy hat? Why don't you rent a fancy hat?
They sell them on the concourse level.
You can't wear the fancy hats often. I say rent a hat.
Who wants to wear somebody else's hat? Right. That's like renting bowling shoes.
Well, I do that as well.
We rent bowling shoes at the track, too.
You brought some hooch. What do you got there?
Yes, I do. I have, what do you think it would be for the
Well, it'd probably be mint juleps.
Mint juleps.
And there you go.
It's the Old Forester, ready to drink mint julep. Pass this over.
Reach into the bag there. We have Derby glasses. Katie Couric didn't bring any booze, did she?
No.
Yeah,
no.
There we go.
No. No, you're delivering.
Yes.
Yeah, and by the way, she's doing better than you and I ever will. Yeah, if anybody could afford to bring booze, it would have been her.
That's true.
No, she did not.
I offered to crack it open back there in the green
room.
You know
what? What am I doing this for? Dave, take this. You're the booze expert. Hand this over to Dave.
Where's Orion? Orion would have had. He would have had one.
Yeah.
I know Dave is game.
We have limited edition Kentucky Derby Churchill Downs glasses. It's very cool.
Yes. You know, I was going to leave it in the green room, but I heard you talking last week.
No, about it's not safe.
A little issue.
You leave it in the green room, it'll be on Rokan's desk at home.
Yes, yes. That's right.
These glasses have all the Derby winners etched or painted on as well, which is nice.
But listen to this for a weekend, guys. We have Kentucky Derby Day. We open tomorrow, opening day. Free general admission, post time 3:15. Saturday, Kentucky Derby Day. Sunday, Mother's Day. All in the same weekend. And you talk about entertainment. In between the thoroughbred races, we are going to have ostrich, camel, and zebra races. How about that? You can't bet on them, but you can sure watch
them. Do we have jockeys?
Oh, good.
I assume they do.
Yeah, otherwise we're going to have a problem. They'll just be running around, I suppose.
Yes, they will. We'll be chasing them down.
There's nothing better than a day at the races, though, because we used to go every year for Mother's Day. We're actually out of town this weekend, my mom, but we go every year for Mother's Day. And you don't need to... Well, I mean, I win big, but you can just bet a couple of dollars on a horse. You don't have to break the bank doing it.
Are you handicapping the ostriches or the camels or the zebras?
I think I'll do a little bit of that, yes. Yeah. The ostriches, whoever wins will win by a neck.
By a neck. Look
yes,
what you did there.
There you go. That was bad, wasn't it?
All right, you got to make a pick.
Do I have to make one right
now?
Make a pick. I'm going to tweet it Saturday.
We'll call this your early pick.
At Howard Sudbury, but I am leaning toward Exaggerator.
Okay. All right. And?
He comes from behind. I know Nyquist can win. You know, 9 out of the 20 horses won their last race.
So is that right?
Yes.
Wow, it's not only a fast field, it's a talented field.
Yeah.
You got who?
I think I have to go Nyquist. He's 7-7. I know he's the favorite, but I got to go with Nyquist.
More Spirit,
he could win.
Been in the money every race. He lost Exaggerator in that sloppy Santa Anita.
Yes.
Bob Baffert's horse.
But might not like the slop. Yes. There's another horse, Mo Tom. He's owned by Benson that owns the Saints.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
Mo Tom has had horrible trips his last two races. He was shut down, blocked on the rail, or he probably would have won both of them. He could win and run really well at a price. How's that hooch over there?
It's fantastic. Well, I was going to say a toast to the new season at Arlington, but again, you guys don't ask me about my pick. Trojan Nation at 50-1. I'm taking Trojan Nation at 50-1, and
here, I'll toast
for the
you
best.
With my water since you
there you go.
You opened my booze and didn't give me a glass.
There you go. And then
what
nice.
A deal. Gee, buddy.
Well,
the guy brings it, and
we don't
take care of him.
Oh, we gave it to Pat.
That's fantastic. All right, Howard, your Twitter account is what again?
At Howard Sudbury.
All right, and the Arlington website?
ArlingtonPark.com.
Great to see you, buddy.
Great to see you.
And have a great weekend.
Me. Thank you.
Get some sleep next
week. Come
out
and see us.
Yeah, I will. Okay. You know I will. It's 9:19. Geraldo Rivera joins us next, and I look forward to asking him, how could Donald Trump be his friend? That in a moment on 720 WGN.
It's not going to be the Republican nominee, period.
What I am firmly convinced of is that Donald Trump will not be our nominee.
I believe that Donald Trump will not be the nominee.
Donald Trump will never be the nominee of the party of Lincoln and Reagan.
Donald Trump, I don't believe, is going to be the party's nominee.
Donald Trump will not be the nominee.
He's leading right now. You
Donald
just looked in
Trump
that camera
will not
and
be
said
the
he's
nominee.
A coward. Will you support him as the nominee?
Donald Trump will not be the nominee.
It's just good to know I wasn't the only one that was completely wrong. Geraldo Rivera is scheduled to appear, but he's friends with Trump. I'm not surprised he's late. So, no, I like Geraldo, and, known him off and on through the years. And, he was on Dancing with the Stars. We have stuff we can talk about.
So you said earlier that Trump would have to select a vice president who likes him, who gets along with him, maybe Geraldo.
Geraldo would be a good VP. Yeah, let's bring that up. Yeah. Plus, Geraldo could bring in the Hispanic vote.
There you go.
Because people go, wait, his name's Geraldo. Doesn't have to know the actual heritage. One plug before we get to maybe some Trump sound if Geraldo doesn't show. In the meantime, the Sunshine Through Golf Foundation is a great organization that Chicago District Golf Association promotes yearly. And today they have a big 100-hole golf marathon. And a bunch of folks have signed up. And I think you still can sign up. If you go to sunshinethroughgolf.org, you and I are going to play with Dr. Kevin Most this afternoon. And if you donate money, you can either donate by holes completed or just a general contribution. All the money goes to Sunshine Through Golf, which is an organization specifically intended to help people with special needs enjoy golf, getting them equipment and training and all those things.
And, yeah, and they're going to build more camps this year, too.
Which is nice.
For a lot of participants, which is awesome. By the way, Dr. Kevin Most has one sponsor. You have two. So you're technically beating him because you have more sponsors.
Dr. Most has $500 raised so far. I've got $150, and you've got $125. Any listeners that would like to contribute, it's a great cause. Plus, it makes us more competitive. So we'll play this afternoon and let you know how that goes. But your help for Sunshine Through Golf anytime is certainly appreciated. And again, you can go to sunshinethroughgolf.org and just click on the obvious links that are right there. Can we run a couple of these Wolf Blitzer Trump pieces of sound? Let's go to Donald Trump on trying to explain why he floated the story that Ted Cruz's father helped Lee Harvey Oswald kill JFK. You know where this came from, right? It was a National Enquirer story and the guy that runs the Inquirer is pals with Trump. The National Inquirer is based in South Florida.
Right.
And here's Trump trying to explain to Wolf Blitzer why that story got out there.
All I was doing was referring to a picture that was reported and in a magazine, and I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it. Now, I don't know what it was exactly, but it was a major story in a major publication, and it was picked up by many other publications.
It was the National Inquirer, and even the expert cited said it couldn't be sure it was Mr. Cruz.
The National Inquirer gave you John Edwards. It gave you O.J. Simpson. It gave you many, many things. I mean, you can't knock the National Inquirer. It's brought many, many things to light, not all of them pleasant. The fact is that it was a cover story on the National Enquirer. It was picked up by many other people and magazines and periodicals and newspapers, and all I did was refer to it.
That's Trump with Stephanopoulos on Good Morning America. That was my mistake. But again, as president, this is not the type of stuff you float. This is not what you do as president.
Well, I know, and especially now he's right off the bat, right off the get-go.
Wasn't me. Yeah, it wasn't me. Wasn't me. Here's Trump talking to Wolf Blitzer in the interview last night on his Muslim ban and other things.
How are you going to work closely with our allies in the Muslim world if you still want this temporary ban on Muslims coming to the United States until the U.S. can figure out what's going on in this war on terror?
Whether or not we have a temporary ban or whether we work over in the Middle East with our Muslim friends and friends, and I have Muslim friends.
You still want
Muslim
this temporary
friends.
Ban?
By the way, I just had one left my office, a very, very successful person from the Middle East, just looked at me and said, Donald, what you're doing is so right. You're informing the world of a problem that we have to solve.
So he agrees with you that all Muslims should be banned?
Many Muslims do. Many Muslims do.
Because I've spoken with a lot of Muslim leaders. King Abdullah of Jordan, who's a close friend of the United States, as you well know, and other moderate Muslim leaders in the Arab world, elsewhere.
And a good person and a good man.
He's a very good person, very good man. Queen Rania is a very lovely
lady.
And
they're friends of my daughter, Ivanka.
I'm sure they are. When they hear you talk like that, they get upset. They're Muslims.
I don't know. I mean, look, I don't know. We have a problem.
You know, that is the equivalent of going, I'm not racist. I have black friends.
That's the first thing I thought of. Remember Kasich got in trouble? It was, I think, a week or so ago, and he said, I'm for gay marriage. I went to a gay wedding.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Yeah,
I'm fine.
I'm okay. I didn't get any gay on me. I'm so ridiculous.
Oh, no.
At 9:21, I got to get one more of these. Why don't you give me Trump talking to Wolf about Putin? Can you find that one for me? Of course, this goes back to Vladimir Putin, and what would you do if Russia continued to buzz naval ships? And how would you handle it? I'll tell you what you do if you're Donald Trump. You put your foot down. You take a hard line.
Let's talk about U.S.-Russian relations for a moment. In the past few weeks, on two occasions, Russian fighter jets barrel rolled U.S. Military facilities.
Lack of respect. For the United States.
If you were
and
president,
for our
what would you tell Putin?
I would call him and I'd say, don't do it again. I would say, don't do it again. And I think I'll have a good relationship with him. So far, we're off to a good start. He said Trump is a genius, okay? I think I'll have a good relationship with him.
Have you ever spoken with him?
I don't want to say.
He can't make it up. Have you ever met him? I don't want to say. And Vladimir Putin, a guy who in all likelihood kills reporters, and you've seen what he's done in many other occasions as the hardline leader and former KGB agent, I think he'd respond well to a call from Trump. Don't do that anymore. Talk to you later.
I would say don't do it again.
Vlad out. 9:31, before we get to the big story, Mother's Day is a few days away. Oh, and I thought the Geraldo interview was terrific, didn't you?
It went well. Yeah. What'd you guys think?
Yeah.
Good?
Yeah, nicely done.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
There's a new book out. Mother's Day, of course, being Sunday. There's a new book out called The Comeback, how today's moms re-enter the workplace successfully. This is a problem that men can't necessarily identify with because we have it easier. But it's a big deal for moms to either, have a baby, go back to work, or, stay at home until the kids are maybe in school and go back to work, or in a lot of cases, stay at home until the kids are maybe in junior high or in high school or after high school and go back to work. So how, as a mom, do you get back on the saddle and get back into the workplace? It's a something that Cheryl Cassone, is it Cassone or Cassone? Cheryl, help me out with your last name.
If it makes you feel better, Bill O'Reilly mispronounced my name for 2 years, and I let him, but it's Cassone.
First off, you should never let Bill O'Reilly get anything wrong.
No, he's always right.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, the book's called The Comeback, How Today's Moms Reenter the Workplace Successfully. As I always say, get two copies, because you're careless, you'll lose the first one. And it's out and available everywhere. All right, so you can talk to every mom about this, no matter what stage of life they're in.
Yeah, that's the book is a lot is for a lot of different women in different stages. Yeah, because either you're maybe you're thinking about, you know, having a family and do I want to work or not? I know a lot of my friends have been through that. Or you're at home and you realize, you know, I kind of want to go back or I have to go back. I mean, I found both stories in my research. There were women that, you know, there was a funny story about a woman who was sitting on the playground and she was listening to the other moms and she realized that she didn't want to be there anymore. She loved her kid's son, but she just wanted to go back to work and create an identity for herself. And then there was, you know, the mom whose kids told her to go back because she was driving them crazy. So there's all kinds of stories like that in the book about why this happens in different stages of life, whether it's 2 years or 18 years. I found everything when I started talking to women.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. And the thing is, what moms need to understand is you're not a bad person if you decide you need the fulfillment of a job to go back to. And if it makes you happier, it can make you a better person at home as well. And maybe your kids won't drive you or your kids won't drive you crazy as much as they have.
Or you don't drive them crazy. But no, what happened is, you know, my mother was the first comeback mom in my life. You know, my parents were married. My mom was home with me and you know, all was well. And she went back part time a little bit at one point, thought wanted to do something. But then my parents divorced and my mom had to go back full time. But I never felt lonely. I never felt neglected. I never felt like I lacked for anything. We spent nights and weekends together. And, you know, there was a Harvard study that just came out that actually shows now, luckily, that the children of working mothers are more successful. They end up being managers. They end up making more money. They end up happier in their work-life balance. They surveyed 50,000 people in this study, which is a lot more than I did for my book. So there's facts out there to back up that you should not feel guilty about leaving your kids at home to go to work. Don't leave guilt and leave insecurity at the door when you walk out into the work world because you're going to be successful. And all the women that I interviewed made it happen, you know, and it's not easy. There's a double standard. We all know that. There's still a double standard for women that decide to stay home for a few years, but you know, we're going to change that.
Cheryl, is it harder with certain jobs than others? I mean, because if you have all this experience, you leave for a few years, you know, you come back, you're probably smarter just because of your life experiences. But is it harder with certain jobs than others?
It is. It depends on the field that you left, and it depends on the field that you want to go back into. So if you came from, especially if you came from technology or if you came from healthcare, you're going to have to take a few steps to get back into those industries because things change rapidly. And those are the two, I mean, as a business reporter, I can tell you those are the two industries that have changed exponentially every month. But then also there's some fields where you can make an easy transition back in, like real estate. There's a little bit of a technology component to real estate, obviously, now with social media. But it really just does depend. One woman I interviewed, she was a good lesson to me because she let her certifications expire in the medical field. And then she didn't plan to go back. She got divorced. So when she goes back, she realizes all of her certifications in the medical field had expired. She had to go back to school. So she's a single mom, she's taken on student debt, and she had to go back, but she wanted to go back into her field. She didn't want to give that up. So, you know, that's the other lesson learned is never let things slip if you can't. You know, try
sure.
to keep a little connected to your industry.
Right, even if it's on a basis where you're doing it and thinking, well, I'll never use this again. You never know. Mary, did you always work or did you take a little time off with kids?
I pretty much always worked, whether it was part-time or full-time. And, you know, I wanted to ask, is that stigma still out there? I noticed it on Big Fat Greek Wedding, the second movie, with the women, how they were kind of making fun of Nia. She stayed at home. you know, and didn't really work, and she had one kid. And these women just seem so petty. Is there still that stereotype with the clashing working women versus non-working women in like a school environment? You know what I'm asking?
Actually, one of the moms went through that at a school, believe it or not. I interviewed over 100 women. She went back part-time. She was a school administrator, but she didn't want to go back full-time. So she worked out a deal to go back to the school to work part-time. She got grief from the teachers, that some of them also were moms, believe it or not, because she was there part-time. And it created a lot of tension. It was emotionally very difficult on her. And she almost quit, but she finally was smart enough to go to her supervisor and say, "This is happening here."
Yeah, it's like bullying. It's bullying among mothers.
yes.
It was crazy.
I was listening to the story and I was doing the interview, and I'm like, "You're kidding me! This really happened," you know? So, yeah, it happens. And that double standard, yes, it's out there. And no HR person is ever going to admit to you ever that that's the case. Oh no, we you know, evaluate all of our candidates equally. And well, it still happens, and it's so sad to say that, but it's true.
Can you know, I feel like Rodney King here, talking to all women. Can't we all just get along? Why are you guys so tough on each other?
We're not. No, there's a lot of women that support other women. I work at Fox News, and I tell you what, I had my book release party, and every girlfriend in this building came out to support me.
Well, that's nice.
I mean, women, yeah, no. I mean, women do support women. There, you can have issues, but you can also have issues with a male boss. And I really don't buy that. I've seen articles written that female, if you're going to be a woman working for another woman, it's worse, that female bosses are more difficult. I've never seen anything to back that up. I think that that's someone trying to, you know, write an article and sell it, in my opinion.
Cheryl Cassone, Cheryl Cassone, and Cheryl Cass One, they were all on the show today. Plugging her book, and you can see her on Fox Business, as she says all the time. The book's called The Comeback. Get it, and happy Mother's Day.
Oh, happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there, and I hope they enjoy their weekend.
And get that book. Thanks. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Bill and Wendy still to come. We got some things to do before we come back. And we haven't mentioned this the entire show, but this is Cinco de Mayo, a day where white people put on funny hats and drink too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Eat a lot of fajitas.
That is actually, if we break it down, if you understand Spanish, Cinco de Mayo means five white people putting on sombreros and getting drunk. That's technically what Cinco de Mayo means. I'm here to help. This is 720 WGN.
I'm making fajitas.
It's another amateur drinking night. So tomorrow is our Mother's Day show, and the only mom available to come in, apparently, is Sandberg's mom.
How about that? Yeah. All of our moms have other commitments.
My mother is refusing to come on. No, I mean, she's got a thing.
Remember at the beginning, they couldn't wait to come in?
Yeah.
Your mom, my mom, Mary's mom. Now they all are.
They're over it.
They have, other stuff going on.
Mary, what's your mom doing?
I don't really know. She's probably got bingo or she's going gambling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she said, I'll be available on the phone.
Yeah, my mom said she'd be available on the phone, too. She said, do you want my friends to talk, too? I said, no.
She's like, what do I have to say about you?
That's what my mom said, too.
Oh, boy.
She said, again?
Yeah.
So I talked to my mom yesterday, and she has a prior commitment tomorrow that she can't change.
She can't tell you what it is? Secret?
She said that not to call her directly, to call her people. I said, wait, I am your people.
Your kid. Did she really say that to you?
So I think we'll have her on Monday.
Oh, good.
Yeah. The day after Mother's Day. Because that'll make it like I missed the whole deal.
A post-Mother's Day thing.
What'd you say, Mary?
Are we having liquor? Is Dave bringing some?
Well, the deal is...
Mary.
The deal is that supposedly we're having a full catered breakfast for Mary's mom.
I know, but then did you see her email? Because it was funny, because I said, well, that's okay, because your parents have never been here. That would be kind of neat for them to see.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
She said, oh, no, it's okay. You don't have to do it just for them. They always have just smoothies for breakfast, and their big meal of the day is lunch.
Yeah, let me just explain. Your parents, Sandberg, are lying to you. They have bacon and eggs. They probably have a ham. They have all of it.
They get the
chef.
No,
honey, we just have smoothies.
The chef carving.
Plus, I think her mom is like the youngster of the group, isn't she? Her mom, probably.
Yeah, probably, I would think.
No, 60s. It's pretty old. I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm just saying that as
pretty
a joke
old.
For Dave.
Well, that would be the youngest of the show moms, probably.
Right, probably.
Absolutely, yeah.
What's the deal with your mom, Jake?
Sandy Jacobson said she's willing to call in.
Yeah, but why won't she come in?
She lives far. It's far, far away.
Well, how far?
She's got things to do.
Give her
she's on the north side. She's too far away.
She's on the north side? Is that where she lives?
No, where does she live?
No, way up in McHenry County, Bull Valley. So it's like
You can possibly get here.
It's hard to come
Bull Valley, you got to fly to Midway and then rent a car.
Well, she told me to talk to her people, but I still haven't gotten confirmation. Exactly.
It's unbelievable.
And especially at that hour of the morning, there's not going to be a lot of traffic.
Yeah, ratings, we'll get her a parking place.
The ratings on this show have never been better, yet we can't get our own mothers to appear.
Yeah, because they have other stuff going
Dave,
on.
Dave, what's your mother's excuse?
Okay, Steve, that really...
Well, no, your mom, Steve's mom is Dave's honorary mom.
Yeah, maybe if you called my mom, because she was your honorary mom last year.
I bet if Annette called her, she'd come
That's right. She was so happy to be Dave's
mom. Yeah, so if you called my mom and said, would you come in for me, I think she'd do it.
I don't want to say this out loud. I think she likes Dave better than she likes you.
I think that's clear.
Yeah.
Completely.
Or
so
she's got a crush on
She won't come in
him.
For you, but she'll come in for me.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. The only way we can find out is if you call.
Let's call her.
Yeah.
I need a mom.
Didn't Annie Lennox say that? Oh, no, that was I need a man.
Dave. Yeah, the way you said it was really kind of pathetic, wasn't it? But you know what a guy does when you say something like that? You laugh. That's nice. That's what friends are for. All right, we'll take a break, come back. Bill and Wendy on the way in just a moment at 720 WGN.